Welcome to the Penny Bloom Podcast. Ain't another place that has got more bombast. Romp past your mom, dad's listening to Tomcast. Talking everything that make you sad. We don't want that. We're here to make you smile. Put your mind at ease. Peace, love, and bloom, and always praise Keanu Reeves. This what we about. Get some weed and now. We'll talk until we can't no more, and then we peacing out. Alright, let's go. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. It's the Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast. Penny Bloom Podcast.
Penny Bloom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Winter is Blooming, a Game of Thrones rewatch podcast by us, the Penny Bloom Podcast. Today, we are discussing Season 8, Episode 3, The Long Night. It was written by D&D, David Benioff, and D.B. Weiss, and directed by Miguel Sapochnik. I am Colton Robertson. I am joined by Joseph George. What's up, homie?
Oh, what up, what up? It is always a pleasure to be here. A long-awaited day. Long-awaited night, I should say. But, man, that's true. We're finally here. Holy crap.
Yeah, no, this is... I made the proclamation to you last night as I was watching it, that this is my favorite episode of Game of Thrones ever. Now, there's layers to that, obviously. You know, I do think that there are episodes of Thrones that are technically better than it. I think that that's fair to say. But I only watched seasons 7 and 8 on TV as they were happening. And this one... I finished the episode. It was me and my family were watching it in the living room. That was how we would, all the lights would go down. The curtains would get shut. It's 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. Mm. Let's watch this episode of Thrones. We watched this episode of Thrones and it ended and I was like, all right, guys, I'm gonna go watch that again. See you tomorrow. I went downstairs, watched it again. The next night I watched it again. The next night I watched it again. I watched it every night for a week straight until season 8, episode 4.
Yeah, no, this one took the world by storm. And I think they kind of knew it as well. This is what the show is truly. Well, maybe. I guess maybe it's what happens in the finale. But this is a very, very, very large, large part of the show coming to a close. And, man, I mean, they made a movie. Like, gonna be, like, it is kind of nuts. Like, this is an hour and a half of just...
Well, and that's what's fascinating, like, is I was thinking about it this morning, about how this does feel like a movie. In one of my texts last night, I literally typed out what's so cool about this movie, and backspaced it and like episode.
But it's different.
And it's fascinating that no television show has ever done anything quite like this. The scale, the massiveness, the impact. It's a whole other level. But it would be a bad movie, which is fascinating. Like, and that's like,
totally. Yeah.
This is one of those things that only television can do. The fact that we do spend just, I mean, tens and tens of minutes in a bloody fantasia of music and action and nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, in a movie, they're going to have to introduce all these characters and you have to learn who they are. But we have had 6 seasons or 7 seasons.
It's the sort of thing that only a show like this can earn. And that's a really cool thing about this episode for me, is that, you know, if you were to just get dropped in a movie, you know, and it was just the opening shot of Sam there with a knife getting put in his hands and him panicking, it would be interesting. It would be an interesting movie. But you wouldn't know anybody. You wouldn't know who you're connected to. You wouldn't know who you love, who you hate. You wouldn't know what the fuck that was going on. So, like, I just love the way that they take full advantage of the medium and let this episode breathe and don't force anything that doesn't need to happen into it.
Dumb dialogue either. No, and by dumb I mean like kind of the self-aware kind of dialogue that they had, that kind of went away this episode.
They capture exact
capture this
perfectly, dude.
I've seen this episode before. I've seen it multiple times, just like you. I don't know exactly the run that I went on that week that it came out, but I remember, like, it was watched many, many of times.
Yeah.
But I've caught, like, so many new things. It is crazy just to see how I watch, like, how I've progressed just as a viewer. Yeah. Over time since then. But, like, it's crazy how, like, the parts that I'm focused on now are like the actors when they're not saying any words to each other, but they're all just like, holy shit, we all know what's coming. We literally don't know what to say to each other. There is nothing to say. We're just looking at each other and we're scared for our lives.
Yeah, man.
And oh my God, they're on a set. There is no threat coming whatsoever. And I'm just like, holy shit. Like it's actually nuts to keep that like feeling, that vibe,
that
the
intensity.
Whole
yeah,
time,
dude.
Like,
because like that moment when Sansa is sent into the crypt and she just silently walks through, and then Tyrion walks up and looks at her, and Sansa just looks at him like, and he just takes a big old swig of wine and walks down the, like, that's
yep.
like exactly
what
like
do you say
it well, was you so know, perfectly dude. Performed, dude. But if you would like to, we can go ahead and start digging into this one detail by detail, and we can get it fallen as night has fallen at Winterfell. Samwell Tarly is fearful, and his nervous hands are filled with a pair of dragonglass daggers by an unseen benefactor. Meanwhile, Tyrion Lannister takes several wine casks from the provisions to take with him into the crypts below, where the non-combatants are hiding. Bran Stark is wheeled by to the Godswood to wait as bait, accompanied by Theon Greyjoy and his detachment of Ironborn, as well as Alys Karstark. And Sansa and Arya oversee one section of the castle wall, while Davos commands another. Lyanna Mormont commands defense of the main courtyard, which is fucking baller, by the way. I love that she's the one leading that section of people,
yeah,
you know, informing them to open the gates and shit at the time, and like, okay, Lyanna, little lady Lyanna. But outside the gate, Brienne of Tarth commands the left flank, accompanied by Jaime Lannister. They are joined by Podrick Payne, the Hound, Gendry Baratheon, Edison Tullett, and Samwell Tarly. And Edison Tullett gets to utter the first words. Dolores Ed gets to utter the first line of dialogue in this episode, which was, there you are. Took your time.
Yeah, I guess it did. It did take some time, even just to get
a
single word.
It was several
yeah.
minutes. Mm-hmm. And like that's one of the things that I remember people being like, "What are we doing?" Like, I don't know what people wanted. Like, but like,
oh,
it's,
no, I much prefer that there's like no words at all.
The intensity of this is fucking palpable.
Yes.
You know,
oh, you're gripped. Yeah. Well, you think they're just going to be like, oh, well, let's talk about tomorrow and our future plans right now, guys. Let's talk about, no, they are worried that they are not gonna make it out of the night, that like that's all that you would be thinking of, that's all that would be on your brain whatsoever. Like, this is I don't know, like, I think you said it perfectly, is like, there are episodes that are like critically made better, but like, as far as just like a Thrones,
and frankly,
just,
I think there are episodes that are written better. I don't know that there's anything that has been done quite as well as this.
Like, Baelor pops into my head. And whenever I'm thinking of Baelor, like, what, probably, like, I don't know. It could be one. Like, of the best episodes ever made.
The best episode of television.
And to the fact that I'm, like, comparing this episode to it, like, that, I don't know of many other comparisons to like throw at it. Like,
I mean, the only battle episode that comes close is Battle of the Bastards. Like, that's the I would say that episode is probably better. I think that
a lot more talking, a lot more strategy, a lot more planning,
a lot more intricacies. But yeah, I mean, like, there's a whole section of the episode before the battle and a whole section of the episode just right after the battle ends and stuff. So like, This is just the fucking battle. Like, this is just the battle.
Yes.
And it's still close to that level, you know, like, and that's mm-hmm. one of the insane things about it. So, like, mm-hmm. I fucking, like, the tension they create for an hour and 20 minutes is fucking incredible. So I love it. But Grey Worm is also leading the formations of Unsullied. One of my top tier picks for character this week. Loved Grey Worm in this episode, and Jacob Anderson's mm-hmm. performance as Grey Worm is fucking incredible. While Jorah Mormont and Quono ride along with the Dothraki cavalry accompanied by Ghost, and Daenerys and Jon ride their two dragons away from the castle so as to not alert the enemy of their presence. But the moonless darkness is impenetrable and eerily silent until a lone rider appears, Melisandre, the Red Priestess, the Red Woman.
Enter in.
Yep.
The sleeper agent of Game of Thrones that I don't know why it hasn't hit me before, but like, as the story goes, you know, we have the Night King. If there's an opposite to like the Night King, it's kind of Melisandre. Like, I understand it's more like the Lord of Light or like the actual god or whatever is behind the scenes.
No, but she's like, channeling that motherfucker for
she's
sure.
She's like the avatar. Like, if the Night King is the avatar for whatever evil fuck is behind it, like, Melisandre seems to be the main avatar for the Lord of Light. And man, like, I don't know. It is kind of crazy that, like,
Elon Misas.
Yeah, Misas. I love that it ends in Misas. It just, little things like that just get me to.
I exonio Elon Misas. I love the chant she does,
but man.
Yeah, she rides on up. She goes straight to Jorah and is like, talk to them. And he's like, yeah, I do. And she's like, tell them to lift their swords. And he's like, okay.
Lift sure.
Tells them to lift them, and all of them are like, okay, you know, I love that all of them just go ahead and lift it on up.
Yeah.
And when they do, she starts praying to the Lord of Light and High Valyrian. The armies Arrak suddenly burst into flame, sweeping from one side of the field to the other. And the music swell here, the reactions on faces. I love the sense of like, okay. Maybe we can fucking do this thing, you know, like, they need something like that. So I like getting the morale up. I like that a lot. It was a nice moment. I love watching the shot from Sansa and Arya's point of view as they like watch it sweep across is fucking gorgeous. And like, I'm gonna be saying that about a lot of imagery in this episode. I mean,
they do a lot of great sweeping shots. Like, and
I was so happy to find that the Blu-ray works fucking wonders on
that
visibility.
Would have been really nice. Yeah, that would have been really nice to see the difference. Because there, even though I moved to like a nicer TV for this episode, there were still some times where I could tell, like, oh, this is, I'm watching it on HBO or I'm watching it on Max. Like, this is, I'm streaming this. I am not like watching this for real.
I mean, it worked fucking wonders for my visit. Like, I'd never seen the episode as good as I did now, and I've watched it like 10 fucking times.
Wow.
So this was, it was gorgeous to look at. And, I never had a single moment where I couldn't really tell what I was looking at, which is a problem that I've had in the past watching it on Max. And we will get to one of the specific standout moments for me momentarily where that was the case, where it was like my litmus test for it. I was like, all right, if I can see what actually happens in this shot, I will know whether or not the Blu-ray is doing something. And I knew what it was doing. So regardless, the Dothraki's Arrak burst into flame and Melisandre withdraws within Winterfell, and Davos is like, open the gate. He's ready to fucking kill her ass. You know?
On business, dude. I mean, dude was instantly, I love that, like, the beginning of kind of, like, everything else before this is kind of just showing the setup of the, you know, everything. This is kind of the real beginning of the episode before, like, any beef or anything happens. And I love that it's Davos just being like, yeah, I told you I would kill you if you ever came back here. Like, and I'm ready. Like, his hand was on his sword. Like, he was like, so what are you doing here? He's like, what's going on? And then can you imagine being...
No, don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry. I'll be dead by dawn. And he's just kind of like,
Does that mean I'll be dead too? Just you? Like, I know you can kind of see the, you know, you got some magic stuff. I don't.
That's what's that cool doesn't sound is that good, like but... she doesn't even know if it means that they will be dead by dawn. She know she's just like, I know that I will be dead by dawn. If the rest of y'all are dead by dawn, I don't fucking know. But
this
I know
is
I
a good...
will.
Okay, yeah. What do you you know? Maybe it's not something specific that she saw in her vision, but I would be curious to know, like, what she knew going in. Like, imagine she saw, like, the very end. Like, she saw herself walking out with just mounds of dead bodies, you know,
right,
whatever. And then she sees, like, her death sort of thing. That's still ambiguous because, like, all those dead bodies
could have been
are
anything.
Like, yeah, it's either the army of the dead or the dead army of the living. And, like,
yeah,
you can't, I don't know. It would, I guess, be ambiguous. You wouldn't know, like, who came out victorious.
Because there's also that moment when she walks past Davos and her and Arya lock eyes. And it's almost a moment of realization. It looks like for Melisandre, like,
it's fine. Like, things, like, she knew the sort of outline, but then she's like,
together,
oh shit. Like,
as she's coming up in here, you know, like, she sees Arya and she's like, you're going to be important. She watches Beric die.
That's true.
For him, for her.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay.
Yep, all right. It. Now that that's happened, we're good. She's
he
like,
served,
we're
he served
good.
His purpose. You know, like, that was it. That's why he brought him back.
Wow.
Get on out of here. You know, like, I loved that shit. So, but,
Jumping the gun a little bit, I know, but the,
no, it's okay.
I do love the red woman, stuff from,
looks
from
like I'm
going
to have to, refresh my page here as I, it just cuts
just
off and then it's, it just cuts off and it just goes to the House of the Dragon promo image underneath. That's all that's on there for the rest of the fucking page. So
that wouldn't be very helpful. We will watch House of the Dragon. No need to advertise to us.
Like, I'm good. I'm there.
We're in.
You got me. I'm in.
Yeah. We're in. We're doing a breakdown of The Long Night right now. If we're not into the House of the Dragon, I don't know who is, but
we've done this whole rewatch in between season one and season two of House of the Dragon. That was kind of the point of what we're doing here. So, you know, we're there, but, emboldened after the lighting of their swords, the Dothraki cavalry are ready to fucking charge. They're like, you know what? Let's fucking do this shit, baby. And this was another series of imagery that just, oh my fucking God, I love it. Whenever
this is kind of, I say it's a gripe, but it's not really. Like, maybe just a dumb decision on the Dothraki's end here. It for the episode, I love it. You're right. The visuals, it's awesome. Seeing them all just burn out and then, like, run back, and everyone's like, oh, holy shit. If the Dothraki are retreating, then, like, we're done. You know, like, I think that's the idea, is to show just an entire army be obliterated with no problem and then the most fearless army to be retreat. I think, like, that's just the point. But, like, why run out? Why split your army? You know, why not just wait for them to come to you still? And like, you just have more people there. You know what I mean? And like, it's just like, it feels like they sent the army to die. No way did they think the Dothraki army could completely kill the army of the dead, or else they would have just fought the army of the dead with the Dothraki before.
Here's my thing, is that I've always kind of, I understand this gripe, I'll say loosely. It's just
the only one I got for the whole episode.
I also don't find it to be a logic hole. I don't at all. I think that tactically, that the Dothraki style is not to wait. They were going to fight the army of the dead anyway, if they ran at them. So, I tend to find it as, like, they are the first line of defense. Everyone knows they are the most fierce fighting force in the world. If there is any army who could take them one-on-one, it probably would be the Dothraki. So I think it was just like, it's the first shot in the dark. And they also, the episode
that
doesn't make
is
it clear.
Their fighting style as well. That is just kind of what they do. They have never lost, actually, you know, like maybe that's actually a part that I didn't think of. They're just like, we're not going to die. They're like, okay.
And the thing is, too, is that the episode, the way they use the Dothraki is fascinating because there's still like thousands of Dothraki left.
It all kind of seemed, I mean, like their swords went out, but then they like, we saw a bunch running back.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of interesting to, that's kind of the treatment of the Dothraki. It felt like they were just kind of thrown out and just like, all right, they're not really a factor anymore and we're done with them sort of thing. But I mean, does Dany still have like a large, like, does she still
a
march
large
like a lot
force
of them?
Of Dothraki
in
a couple episodes here. So like, that's my thing is that like, it's fascinating the way they are utilized in this episode. I think it does make sense. I think that they're trotting them out there because they stand the best chance. This is the way that they fight. If they can put a dent in the army of the dead before they charge, that'd be very, very helpful. The swords going out also, the imagery indicates that they are dying, but they're just fucking cold out there. They put out fire. That's their fucking thing.
So
like, I think that's part of it too. So like, there's just a whole slew of things that I think work more on a visual level than they do logically. Yeah.
And I think, I mean, it sets up the battle perfectly. Like, it gets you to be like, oh shit. Like,
this fucking like, let's fucking go, baby. They've been building up the Dothraki for season after season. Jamie talked about how there's not an army in the world that can stack up to them. If there's anybody, like, if there is anybody who can take the army of the dead, it's the Dothraki. So whenever all their swords go out and they flash to like specifically Jamie, whose face goes from like smiling to just kind of like,
oh,
you know, like it's god, I fucking love it. I love it.
Okay.
So regardless, it's obviously not the way you want to kick off the battle, you know. Just do thing after thing after thing that indicates to you there is no way to defeat them beyond killing the Night King. And it's the only way you can get this motherfucker. So but I loved watching, you know, the stray horse fleeing back and all of them slowly running through like, fuck, goddamn, you know, like if you're watching the Dothraki run away, it's pretty fucking dark. The shot that I always use as my litmus test for how well I can see things is Jorah riding back. The first time I watched this episode and I saw Jorah riding back, I thought he was like terribly wounded. Like, you can't really see him. He's just kind of like motion blurred as he runs on by.
But yeah, he does.
And he's doing this and he's just really. So like the first time I watched this, I was like, oh no, what the fuck happened to Jorah out there? Like, is he done? Is it? And then I watched it and like, obviously later on in the episode, he pops up, you know, he's fine. But I watched it on the Blu-ray and I could see it perfectly clear that he's got like a tiny little head wound and that's like it. Like, he's fine.
What happened to Ghost?
Ghost rides. Ghost is fine.
Because he goes out there with Jorah, but is that the last time we even see him in the episode?
We don't see him the rest of the episode. Yeah, we don't see him the rest of the episode. They had a lot of dragons to CG, man. No time for more Ghost, you know?
That is true. But, like, we see him, like, I don't even remember. Like, he's alive at the end. Like,
yeah, he goes
with John north of the wall. Yeah, okay. Yeah,
I think he goes north of the wall with Tormund. Like, next episode. John hands him off.
Oh.
He's like, that's where you belong.
That's right. They go. He goes south with does all that stuff and then goes back up. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I do. But, okay. Yeah, I guess. Did Ghost even get, like, a nice little, like, a nice kill or something? I think I remember him,
I don't know that we saw
maybe
one.
Jump.
I mean, one of my favorite shots of the episode does include Ghost, and it was one of the ones I was going to comment on when they're charging. The fucking flaming fireballs flying above them all riding on their horses, Jorah's running like center frame, and then Ghost catches up in the foreground, and it's like, okay, fuck yes, let's fucking do this thing, you know, like, I love that shit, but, after this, you know, the build up, whenever they're waiting, and you hear and it just keeps getting louder and louder and louder, and you can't see. And then they barely break into frame, and then they cut above to show the wave crashing over. God damn. And watching them smack into that troop, Tormund look over at them and be like,
yes, oh my dude, fucking the front God. Lines. Here. Yeah. Like, you got Grey Worm at the front. We got, you know, Tormund over there. You got Brienne, Jaime, the Hound, like all these like crucial people at the front. And then you start just seeing, whoa, like, I mean, the first time I'm watching this, I'm like, are we Everybody about to did. Lose? Like, I'm like, holy shit. Like, we're about to lose all these people that are outside of the wall, like right now.
Yeah.
And like it, the stakes, like that's, there's no question on if the stakes are there. Like, it is. Even while I'm watching this episode now, fully knowing that the Night King dies and the whole army goes at the end of the episode, I'm still like, no, like, you need to, like John, no, get behind that wall when the fire comes, or like, you know, certain moments when I'm like, no, like, this is not going well, and I get scared, there are certain but I know it's all good.
There are certain odds in this episode that are so insurmountable. It's fascinating the way they pull it off. In a way that is believable in comparison to like season 7, episode 6, Beyond the Wall. I'm confident none of them should have lived in that situation. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's one of those things that logically it makes no fucking sense that any of them made it out. And I think you can make that argument once more that none of these people but good prevails. I love that. So it's fine. And a lot of the characters who were in a situation where I thought, like, oh, you're fucked. Like, you don't stand a fucking chance, do end up dying. It's just not in that situation that they end up dying. So it's funny that, like, it ends up wrapping itself up that way. One specifically is Theon. The bows and arrows are a terrible tactical choice. The way that the wave of dead that comes at them initially, there's like 6 of them there and they all have one fucking arrow. Like, no, you didn't fucking do that. You know, so no, they end up.
That's why Benjen had it right, dude. You just need that.
You need that fucking flail.
You just need
something you can swing.
Imagine,
you know?
The Ironborn are just in a circle around Bran. They all just have one of those things and they're just just a circle of impenetrable dragon glass. You know, was it made out of dragon glass or was it just the fire that was just killing them? Yeah. So, I mean, doesn't even need to be dragon glass, but they got that now. It could be the double. I don't know. Can dragon glass be lit on fire? That'd be kind of, I guess, no need.
No need at that point, but regardless, it was cool imagery and I like the way Theon goes out, but it was one of those things where I was it always sticks out to me. There's like 3 of them and they all have one arrow drawn and like 15 come at them within like 10 fucking feet. So it's like, no goddamn way.
Maybe it's just the Night King flexing and he's like, I know I'm not, you know, I know I'm going to win here. I've nothing to worry about. Let me just.
Yeah,
look cool.
I love that shit. Regardless, I'm fucking in. But the battle has commenced. The Unsullied form phalanxes while catapults start shooting flaming barrels into the night, and by the light of the fires, the true size of the undead horde can be seen. The shots of just the sheer numbers they have. It was just one of those things where it's like, there's no fucking chance.
Yeah.
We don't stand a fucking shot. And they rush down from the north and slam into the defenders around the wall. Around Winterfell, and they are quickly overrun by the Wights, who swarm over the top of each other and the infantry formations like a tidal wave, and a savage melee sees most of them surrounded, and they are killing Wights with their dragonglass weapons, but not nearly enough as the living dead drag down and overwhelm the defenders through sheer numbers. And viewing the battle from the west, Daenerys is upset at the slaughter of her Dothraki, and wants to strafe the Wights. And John's like, hey, we got to find the Night King. This is not part of the plan. You can't go down there and just start flaming motherfuckers. We got shit to do. She's like, the dead are here. The Night King's not. Let's go ahead and fucking do this thing. And John's like, all right, let's go ahead and do this thing. Let's go and scorch motherfuckers. And again, we get a nice little music swell and another small moment of hope whenever, you know, you watch Jamie and Tormund react to the fire just
yes. Torching like it. Imagine me and Jamie, you know, his previous dragon interaction is, oh, right. This thing is coming to kill me, and I'm screwed. This was, you know, like, that was the last, like, insurmountable. He had the Dothraki charging at him, and then Drogon. But I must imagine how it would feel to be like, oh, a dragon on my side now. You know, that would be like, oh.
Even if it is just for a second, you know? Because, like...
Mm-hmm. I guess you have the Night King.
In this moment, though, he's even like, I have the Dothraki, and I have the dragons on my side, and we still might not win. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's insane. But the White Walkers themselves do not engage as their forces continue to flood the castle, and instead of staying in a mounted line far behind the front, content to throw wave after wave of undead pawns at the castle, John sees the White Walkers and tries to make a bombing run. He's like, fuck it, let's see if this works.
Let's do it. I'm straight for the dude. Why not? You know, I'm him.
It's not a bad idea, you know? He's killed one. And seven of them dropped instantly. So if however many they've turned, if he can kill them, they all die.
And
so
like on a dragon, you know, they have no idea if dragonfire kills them. You know, this is like a great.
Might as well take a shot at it. They unfortunately do not get the chance as the storm is brought.
Yeah. Avatar, Night King over here.
Right.
Wind or air bending the weather. Yeah. Kind of OP. Yeah. Another thing they're not used to. You know, a lot of, just magical shit in this battle. They're like, well, oops. Like the whole trench that they have, it eventually gets lit, but they're like, we kind of just didn't expect that this dude brings winter with him and fire is very hard to light. Yeah. But it was really cool to kind of just see him be like, nope, wave, well, see you later,
the
John.
Plan, initially, again, the plan is that they do not charge and take out a bunch of whites. Davos signals to them, and they light the trench. It is the job of the dragon to light the trench. Mm-hmm. And because they're engaged, because they left their post, and because of that, they brought the storm, they decided... They couldn't get it done. So like it creates a cool moment, but like it's cool to watch the plan they set up just fall apart step by step. Which is never good.
Probably was going to anyways. You know, you can have a plan in place, but this is just doomsday. You know, everyone's just gonna do whatever they feel like they need to do. There's no, I don't know. Once one part of the plan was gone, it's just. It's over. It's
oh, yeah.
Everyone just live. Just survive. Do anything you can. And
dude, it's wonderful. A great fucking survival episode. But this breakdown's a little out of order. They're gonna kinda stick with Jon and Daenerys for a second here, so bear with me. But as Jon and Daenerys struggle to find one another in the storm, Jon calls Dany's name and they eventually reunite above the storm clouds. Some beautiful imagery there as well. One of my favorite shots is actually when the storm is brought and you see it like bearing down on like a tidal wave.
Yeah.
And Drogon's flying underneath it and the glow is reflecting off the clouds. Like, I've always fucking loved that shot. But then again, when they're above the clouds and they decide to go back down.
Fantasy as hell. Yeah, that was.
Oh,
that
gorgeous.
Was
gorgeous.
Jon just being, you know, they're kind of just chilling there for a second. And then Jon's like, all right, we got to go. He just I don't know what to call that. Just like an instant dive down. And then Danny's like, all right, I'll follow you. I don't know. It's just.
Yeah. The way they did like a fucking roller coaster, you know, like, the introductory shot of the Night King where he raises his hand as he's like, riding on the back of the dragon. Like the way that he looked and the White Walkers looked to this episode was fucking awesome. Ultimate makes his first appearance above. He announces himself on the wings of Assyrian as he's just kind of hovering there like, y'all want to come and get me? Fucking come and get me. You know, like he kind of knows what's up. And Daenerys makes the first run at him, but Night King gets behind her and chases her. But Jon tries to follow, knocked out of the way while Daenerys manages to evade the attack. And when Daenerys and Jon find each other again above the clouds, the Night King is gone. And the Night King makes his way to Winterfell. But the remaining and is badly affected. The only infantry still holding up reasonably well by this point are the lockstep legions of the Unsullied, horrifically trained to strip away all fear and robotically follow their battle formations. And boy, did it seem like that paid off here.
It's sad. It's like kind of sad to see them. Like they were backing up like a little bit, you know, and like,
oh yeah. And but, I mean, like it was a tactical backup. Like they had,
yeah, it they, wasn't they were a fearful
evacuating
one.
Line was, by line.
They like were just protecting the retreat, yeah. And they knew they were dying, but still just hold.
That's
position.
Why I
and I'm just like
loved
oh,
Grey Worm, dude.
Man.
There's so many moments in this episode that like give me chills and like make my eyes fill up with tears, just because like the way
he
that
knows.
People are fighting for life, it's beautiful. You know, like when Grey Worm goes. Like he's watching the people retreat. He hears Tormund call out like, "Fall back!" And Brienne yells it too. They're all going back, and Grey Worm like watches them all retreat, and he just kind of stands up, and goes, "Protect the retreat." I'm like, okay.
And
okay.
And whenever he's dropping that drawbridge or whatever you call that, like he knows he's kind of like sentencing his army to die. Like he knows like. Once this is flipped, everyone who's out there,
it's done.
They're done. You know, like, and I'm doing this to my, like, these are my, like, brother. Like, these are the people that I, like, went through all of this with. And I'm, you know, it was kind of like, no words were said, but that was kind of just implied through the moment. And that's like, just crazy.
Yeah, Jacob Anderson was really fucking good with his eyes, because it's mostly his eyes.
Yeah, through the helmet, too.
Yeah.
Like, I love the shots of him putting on his helmet, taking it off, and like,
dude, and just whenever, kind of like, whenever the army's coming and you can hear it, and he just kind of,
oh, that one. Oh, yeah. When he puts it on at first, that one. Yeah. On.
Yeah, that's and hard. But yeah, whenever he does retreat ultimately and he takes it off and he's looking at his people and he's like, God damn. All right.
Ooh, man.
But, yeah, they protect the retreat and, a full retreat is in order. Grey Worm commands the Unsullied to to form up a rear guard to protect it. And Samwell Tarly is nearly killed in the retreat, but Dolores Ed saves him, only to be stabbed from behind and killed. R.I.P. my boy,
God
Dolores Ed.
Damn it. Why did it? You know, I like that he saved someone. It is nice, but it kind of feels like Sam got him killed a little bit, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, for sure.
Heat of battle, you know, understood. There is a lot of chaos. It's not Sam's fault.
No, it's just one of those things where it shows that Sam's a little bit of a liability. Like, that's a...
Man, it was, you know, and I don't know. It was it the first death? Like, the first, like, big, like,
death,
actual
yeah.
character that died? Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, I don't know. It felt like it was the easiest death to start with, you know, I guess, of all the characters to go, but it kind of felt like, oh man, Sam, you really got him killed there, dude. Like that was,
yeah. I mean, the fact that Sam makes it out of this battle is just a miracle unto itself.
Bran, this is, it's kind of in my head. I love that Bran is just like, I'm gonna head out. See you later. I gotta do some stuff. So I gotta imagine that he's going now. He's like controlling random people throughout this battle, because no way he's just in Crows and like looking and shit. I don't know. So I gotta imagine he's controlling some people. In my head, it's like, I need Sam. Like Sam's, that's my mate. That's my maester. You know, he's gonna be on my council. I need that man. So he's like every little way to save the people that he needs. I don't know. I feel like he's just doing little things here and there to save those people, but. I don't know.
That's tough because we're again getting into the territory where it's like, does he know that? Does he even know that Sam's going to be his fucking?
And no, I don't think so. I don't think. Oh, okay. I see what you mean there. Oh, yeah. How would he? He doesn't.
Yeah, he doesn't. He can't see the future. He obviously has visions.
I always forget this.
Yeah, the future is the tough part. And also, I don't know how much he's lying about that. Can he see the future? And he just says he can't, you know, like, is that something he, cause I mean, he's clearly been lying about shit because he ultimately gets to the point where he's like, well, of course it was always going to be me, you know, like, so
maybe it is some sort of thing where since he knows everything. He knows it's like a loop, or like it's this repeating cycle, or he just knows like history repeats itself. Like if these things happen, it's happened so many times over history, it's going to happen this way.
He's
so
got
like
a little bit of that. He's got a little bit of Mentat in him, that Dune shit.
Yes, the fact. It's more factual, you know, more like the
highest probability. What, based off of history, what is the most likely thing to happen next?
Mm-hmm. Sort of. And it may be like a little bit of a little finger sort of thing where it's like, if you imagine your enemy's moves, then nothing will ever surprise you. And he can literally check
in literally do that.
What his enemies are thinking in the time. And like, you know, so like, he's just, he can't maybe predict the future perfectly, but out of anyone there is, it's either him or Melisandre or any other, you know, red, like that's the only people who can see,
right?
Who I'd bet on, you know, that would know the future.
No, yeah. Well, and what's also crazy is there is no book basis for his ability.
Yeah. Just,
he doesn't become the Three-Eyed Raven until season 6, which is the season after they start being off book. So, like, they don't even really know what Bran is capable of. So it's kind of like, they kind of do the best with what they've got sort of thing. And I think they do a damn good job. But it'll be fascinating if George R.R. Martin ever puts those books out to see what that ability is like straight from the horse's mouth. You know, like that'll be really interesting shit. But and maybe there's more in later books. I've only read the first two. Maybe there is a little bit more of diving into the training with the Three-Eyed Raven than there was in the show. I don't know. But regardless, Dolores Ed goes down. It's a damn shame. I hate to see him go. But the Whites gradually force their way forward and slaughter, even as Unsullied reinforcements step forward to take the place of each that falls. And the Unsullied are on the verge of being overwhelmed when the last of the main host gets back through the gates and desperately Grey Worm orders that the trenches around the castle, which have been filled with flammable pitch, be set on fire. And Grey Worm himself is with the last remaining rear guard, who cannot abandon the earthworks if they are not set aflame. And attempts by Arya and the other archers to shoot the pitch with flaming arrows are blown away by severe winds, while the snowstorm prevents the dragon riders from seeing their signal. And then the Red Woman, she appears once more. She's like, I just did this a little bit ago.
Yes.
Be too hard to do.
Grey Worm, kind of the one to be like, oh,
form up.
No, we need to get you there. I like Melisandre, she was just kind of standing there, you know? So like maybe it didn't feel like she knew that she needed to do this though. You know, it kind of, at least the idea that I got was that Grey Worm was the one who was like, hey, we need you, go do this right now sort of thing.
I see. Now I kind of took it to be that fucking thing that she's capable of where, the interaction she has with Arya later on, you know, kind of that. Where it's like,
she's just waiting to be used. Like she knows she's going to be needed at some point.
Yeah, like, and she literally talked with Grey Worm before this whole shit popped off. Where she goes, Valar
Morghulis. That's right.
So he looks at her. She looks at him, and he's like, "Okay, yeah, good idea." They don't say anything, but he's like, "Yeah, yeah, all right, let's fucking do this thing." So I love their like unspoken sort of connection here.
She's so sick. Yeah, she's my character for the episode, though. I kind of had to. I was just so taken. Like, I can't believe I've never really noticed her before.
She's the MVP of this episode, far and away. Like, without her, they fucking lose. And bad.
Yeah, it would not have been good.
Yeah. She's
a lot of things. Yeah. No. A lot of things would have gone very wrong. Because if this fire isn't started, I mean, it's just delaying, you know, the siege, which does happen. It all, like, really, they're all just buying time until the Night King dies, is kind of the whole plan. It's like, we can't kill the whole army. So, like, just stay alive for as long as you can.
There are things that I wish were different about this episode. I love the way Grey Worm is utilized in the first, like, 30 minutes. But then there's like 50 minutes after where he's just one of the fucking people trying to survive, which I get. That's just kind of how episodes go. But on the action side of things, it is very cool to watch them all fight these whites that are completely incapable of actually fighting. They just have sheer numbers. I would have loved to have seen different characters actually fight White Walkers.
That's like all the Horde and the undead. That is cool. But man,
when they're marching
like...
in at the end, it could have been really cool to have like a couple of them face off with like Grey Worm and Brienne and like and these sorts of characters who might actually have a chance
with Valyrian steel swords. Yeah. Like, and we gave like specifically like one to Brienne. Like I like it's, you know, they all have dragon glass and they all have weapons that can kill them, but like. The Valyrian steel sword just kind of
Jaime
feels.
Jaime and Brienne going 2v2 with a White Walker pairing, like that would be really fucking cool.
Imagine Jaime and Brienne versus White Walker. Their little ice sword. Jaime catches it in his freaking gold hand. It doesn't kill him. The White's like, "Yo, what the hell?" His hand shatters or whatever, but then he's like, and then
separate from his body. Yeah,
bam.
Good call.
I guess it is kind of connected to him, so maybe it would fuck. But like, I don't know. It's magic. It's all different. So like,
it's also
it.
A different material, you know. Like, yeah. it's a different organic material. Like, it's not organic. It would probably just shatter the golden hand. Like, that's a great fucking idea, you know. So that's the sort of thing where, like, obviously, I wish John and the Night King could have gotten a fucking face. That really fucking sucks. And I don't even need John to kill him. Like, that's not even something I really want. I would have loved. If right before he raises the dead, if he actually had a chance, maybe they, you know, like they actually get a chance to fight for a second. And amidst that fight, maybe they separate and the Night King panicked, raises the dead, you know, like instead of being so in control the whole fucking time.
That moment, whenever he does raise the dead, they kind of won before. Like, I don't know. Was there still like just an. Like an unrelenting horde outside of Winterfell still at that moment when he does raise the dead? Cause it kind of looked like the battle was like everyone inside of Winterfell was chilling. Everyone, like they killed the last, like everyone, I don't know, everyone was dead. And like, then the Night King raises everyone back. And then that's, you know, when it starts back up again, obviously, but like, it kind of seemed
they'd
like
they'd kind of done a lot of good. They'd kind of put a huge fucking dent in that army for sure. But now everyone who's died, period.
It's they doubled their army. Like,
not reanimate
doubled, but...
already dead whites, or once a white is killed, is a white fucking done for?
How many
like
times that? Can you die? Yeah,
right.
Can you only
can
be
you
brought back once?
Back up.
I'd say so.
I would assume so. So he's just raising the people who were just
everyone
alongside.
Literally anybody whatsoever that's there. I think like the people in the crypt, he didn't even know. He was just like he didn't plan on doing that. It's just anyone within the certain radius, you know. And I love that like they kind of prove that it is like a radius thing, that he is like this Bluetooth kind of hive mind, because like when he does go out, everyone dies in a perfect circle and it slowly keeps spreading out. Like I love that it's like this dude is just like a hot spot.
He's just
but I guess I'm jumping. I guess I don't know. I don't even know where we are in the actual breakdown.
The thing is, it's all just fucking fighting. Besides, like the couple times we cut down to the crypt, like it's just fucking fighting, you know. But Grey Worm forms that formation, and it allows Melisandre to find her way to the barracks. And she says, you know, she repeats her incantment.
Misas.
Hi exonio, ilon misas. I exonion, ilon misas. And she has to do it a few times. And right, you know, last second, one's coming for her ass. The shot of it lighting up in her eyes is fucking cool. I love that.
Yeah.
And then it spreads around.
Love all of the, like, she's pretty confident in her abilities now after resurrecting Jon Snow, I'd say. Like, that was kind of like her big, like, okay, I'm back sort of moment. But, like, every time she does something, she's like, okay, like, good. Like, this is going kind of how I saw it, or, like, you know, like, but also she's more, like, her, she's more found in her faith. Like, she is very much a believer in every little thing that happens. She's getting more and more confident, like, as the night goes on. I thought that was just really cool to see, like, those little moments of her.
Oh, yeah.
Just facial acting as well. It's just,
oh yeah, Carice Van Houten is very, very good. You know, like, I love the way that she portrays the Red Woman in this episode. And, you know, it's that last little moment where she's getting kind of worried. She's like, all right, come on now. Come on now, Lord.
I really need you. Yeah. I'm gonna say this one with a lot of emotion. Please.
Jesus. Yeah, it's really, really good. And it lights up. I love seeing the Hound back away, seeing the dead through the flames. Like, that was very cool. And seeing the fight approaching, Arya tells Sansa to flee to the crypts, as she'll only get killed if she remains. But Sansa protests that she can't abandon her people. And Arya gives her sister a dragonglass dagger to defend herself with. And when Sansa says she doesn't know how to use it, Arya advises her to stick them with the pointy end. And that was one of them for me. I was like,
it's like,
you know what, dog? Like, I kind of fucking love it.
Like, at the end of the day, is it cheesy? A little bit. If taken out of context, completely. But I don't care. You know, I need it. You know, perfect. One line, heat of the moment.
I love that the callback doesn't even really mean anything to Sansa. So
no,
she's kind of like,
it's just her and Jon. Yeah, it's just Arya and Jon. She's just like, oh, okay, well, that's good advice. Yeah,
thanks.
I guess.
You know, like, okay. I think I could have figured that one out. Regardless, I love that little moment. And in the crypt, Sansa meets other women, including Missandei and children, as well as the infirm and non-combatants like Tyrion and Varys. And Tyrion laments that he should at least be up on the battlements, even if he can't fight well. Just like at the Battle of the Blackwater, he and Varys still use their great intellects as commanders. And she's like, no.
You die, dude. She's like, yeah, you'd be dead. You don't even understand what the fuck is going on up there. Like, you're good. Like, just stay down here. We're good. Like, you don't want to go up there, actually.
Yeah, your witty remarks won't make a difference, you know. And the bravest thing that they can do now, she says, it's a little bit of a callback to last season when Tyrion says nothing. Sometimes nothing is the bravest thing you can do. You know, like, and she hits him with the, you know, look, that's the bravest thing we can do now is look the truth in the face. And Tyrion is moved and quips that maybe they should have stayed married, to which she responds, you were the best of them. And Tyrion remarks that, terrifying.
He's like,
thought.
Oh, really? He's like, I'm the best? I mean, like, for sure. Yeah. Like, there's no obviously, question.
But, like, his self-deprecating ass. Yeah, it's, it's perfect.
Because it seems that he's saying it as if he didn't know who her previous husbands were, you know, and he's like, oh, man, if I'm the best, then you really had to have gone through it. But, like, he knows. Like, he knows that it was freaking Bolt. What's his first name? Ramsay. And obviously Joffrey. I mean, he obviously knows that one. But, like, it was weird. The delivery kind of made it seem that it was not so self-deprecating, or like that he did, like it was unaware of like the previous marriages or whatever. But
I took it to be self-deprecating because
I see that
it's
now.
Terrifying for her, you know. Like, if I'm the best of them, that's a fucking terrifying thought. Like, you've gone through it. If I'm the best of them,
yeah. But they, I don't know, like they weren't like giving me anything of being like, oh, I need them together. But it was like, their moments together were like really cute. Yeah. Like it was, I really
Sansa,
did like it.
You know, continues saying a marriage wouldn't work between them. And Tyrion's like, and why not?
Yeah, you know, wait, actually, like, why not? Like, if we make it out of this,
what's the fuck going on? You know, like, we can make it out of this. You never know. And she says, the Dragon Queen, your divided loyalties would become a problem. And Missandei doesn't like this.
You're talking about my best friend. She's like, hey guys, I'm not going to let you talk about her behind her back. You know, I'm going to stand
up. It was a bar, you know, she says there would be no problem if the Dragon Queen wasn't here. We'd all be dead already.
kind of fair enough. Yeah. Your Suicide Squad past the wall. Goodbye. I guess a lot of other things would not have had all Westeros, or Essos, just wouldn't have happened. Yeah, a lot of things would not have happened, but kind of a Dune storyline-esque of like, is it good? Is the conquest she's on good in the first place, you know? Mm. If she doesn't come over to Westeros, the Night King doesn't get a dragon, and he cannot go south of the wall. Or, I don't know, maybe he had some other plan.
Threat would loom until he does, though. So, like,
how are we going to get south of the wall, though, man? What if he don't have a dragon, what is that man going to do? He has spears. That's all he has. He has spears, horses.
I've got to imagine he had some sort of plan beyond a dragon. A dragon just made his shit a lot easier.
It's all too perfect. It's all perfect situation, perfect happenstance. It's like the Night King might just be some mindless whatever, but
that's what I'm
especially
saying.
This episode has shown me he's definitely not. This was like almost ceremonial, like the killing of Bran whenever we get down there. Like all the other White Walkers that are like behind him, they're all there. Yeah. This is very like ritualistic almost, you know, sort of thing. So I don't know. There's strategy that he actually had, like, going into this. Like, I feel like he, you know, their Battle of the Bastards kind of strategy was like, don't fall into Ramsay's trap. You know, he's going to do something mm-hmm. very obvious that is going to lure you out, and then the plan's going to go to shit. What does the Night King do? He lures Jon and Dany out, and they can't light the fuck, whatever, and now Jon is chasing him and all this shit. You know, it's like...
No, yeah. I think he is a tactically brilliant guy. I've never thought that he is mindless. That's what I'm saying about the dragon thing. I think the dragon just makes shit for him easy.
I think, now I can turn my plan up to 100.
To your point, yeah, like, I think he has plans. He has ideas. Hmm. He just had an easier way once he got a fucking dragon.
That's it. The wall, though, man, it's just, that is the insurmountable villain or any, like, that is the Night King's enemy. Once he gets past the wall, it's just kind of wraps. He's just going to do what he's going to do. But that's the only thing standing in his way. Like, there's... And I don't think with the numbers that he has, I don't think climbing over it is really, I don't know. I guess maybe that could have been kind of cool. Maybe like that's where they would have gone if he doesn't have a dragon. They just start to climb the wall and then.
I don't think it's possible. They can't make it past the wall if the wall.
The magical barrier.
Down.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, so that's what I'm saying is like, I think it's like impossible for him to get south of the wall without a dragon or. The wall going down, and the wall going down doesn't happen.
No, and I'm with that. I just don't think there's a way for him to have planned for getting a dragon. That's what I see. I don't think that.
Okay.
Years in the making plan was like, and maybe hopefully one day I'll get a dragon. You know, like, I to your point, I think he's too tactically intelligent for that, and to have rose up at this specific time, to have started making his moves at this specific time, it indicates to me that he had a degree of confidence even before he had a dragon. So like, I'm not saying like I know what the other idea was, I'm just saying I believe he would have had another idea.
I get you. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, I definitely get you. I guess in my head, he's kind of like the anti-Melisandre, and he sees kind of some visions or something as well. You know, like, because he can see Bran, and, like, he can warg, and obviously, because he's warging an entire army, you know, basically. Like, I think warging is kind of definitely, like, yes, he can do that. But as far as, like, seeing the past and everything that Bran can do, I don't know about that. But, like, it would be, like, I don't know. They don't get into this in... George is, you know, the Night King's not even the Night King in the books whatsoever, but it would be really cool just to get like the mythos like behind him and see like if, you know, this 200 years that Melisandre has been alive, if like that's like her whole purpose was to make sure the Night King would not succeed, sort of thing. And then it's this 200 year sort of long-term plan that is slowly connecting, and she doesn't even know how it's going to, but like it's just slowly over the years. And then, but on the other side of that, the Night King sees a dragon in a vision. He sees the wall going down, or, you know, he maybe sees these sort of things, and that's his motivation for doing the things he does. But again, he's dead by this episode. They don't ever go back into him. So, like, and that's the thing. Once George drops the book, it's not even going to be the same thing. So it's
We're never going to get answers about this thing, regardless. So it is interesting, and that's why I think that they don't dive into it, man. Like, they're like,
it is just too complicated. It is just kind of easier to.
They don't know how to fucking explain it because they don't have to think of an explanation. You know, like, they're just kind of like, he's dead.
That's true.
He's trying to kill everybody. Like, that's just kind of what he does.
Maybe it is just best to leave it at that.
Right. You know? Maybe. Who knows what it could do quality wise if they do try to explain everything. But in the Godswood, Theon Greyjoy can also hear the approach of the undead army, and he starts to apologize to Bran, but Bran politely cuts Theon off, saying, my favorite line of the episode, everything that you have done has led you here, where you belong, home. And I was like,
couldn't have said that to Mira. I don't know the person who literally escorted you and risked her life way more than Theon.
Something a little more, bro. He just must have a better handle on it by now, just his whole fucking situation.
And Theon is kind of like an actual brother to him as well, you know? Like,
you would think that Mira's earned that sort of sibling-esque title by the time.
You would think. I guess Theon grew up in the castle.
He went through a lot more with Mira, I would say, with Mira at his side.
I guess more bad shit. I guess, like, he has just good memories with Theon, probably. You know, like, good in the sense of, like, brother. But, like, you know, I think, like, it's just, like,
I'm going to take this castle, go tell everybody that
that I killed you and your brother. Fair. What a show.
a lot of stuff going on. But regardless, after he says that, Theon's like, oh, yeah, thanks, man. And Bran's like, I have to go now. And he goes ahead and deuces out, starts warging into a flock of ravens around Winterfell, and through his eyes, he comes
across the rest of the episode. The whole rest of the episode.
Yeah.
No explanation of what he's actually doing, you know, just... Okay. I thought there was going to be some through line of, like, he made this happen, or he's watching this specifically to, you know, it's just, nope, we need a transition to show the Night King on a dragon, so we're going to fly some crows, and there you go. And Bran's just in warg mode for the rest of the time until the Night King is there. But
Yes, he is. And it's one of those things where, like, there are certain things that shine through as, like, oh, yeah, D&D did write this, you know, and that's one of them. It's like,
I guess, what else is he going to do? I don't know.
Well, like, that idea you had earlier, where he's warging into people and he's fighting for them, you know, if there's a...
I would love it. Because, like, when he gets into Hodor, Hodor is just kind of big enough to where, like, anyone that goes into Hodor's body can do damage. But he's, like, the three-eyed raven. I would have loved it to be, like, he's, like, wired in the Matrix. You know, he's, like, he knows all the fighting styles.
He can do anything.
I thought it would be really cool if he just hops in a body, turns him into an elite warrior out of nowhere.
Knows how much time just in fights, you know? You can't show him warg into somebody and do something like that, you know? Imagine
someone who doesn't fight well, like Davos. Imagine, like, just seeing Davos's eyes, like, roll, and then he just turns into, like, this fucking killing machine out of nowhere. Yeah. Like, I think that'd just be hilarious. But,
like, Ghost.
Ooh,
Ghost can't kill anybody on his own because he doesn't have dragon glass or fire. You know, like, it would be really fucking cool if Bran uses Ghost to, like, team up with people. Like, he's like grabbing people and, like, tossing them into attacks or into fire or something. You know, like, it could be cool.
Better solution: give Ghost a dragon glass grill.
There you go.
Just his canines, you know, just like, put the tips of dragon glass on his canines and let him. Oh,
that's
dude, that would
fucking idea. That'd have been hard as fuck.
Drills probably just aren't a thing though. Back, you know, no, that's yeah. just
they're not
complicated.
You put your hand in Ghost's mouth, he bites. You know,
that's true. Yeah, easier said than done. That one is.
But no, but see, but like, there's all sorts of, like, and that's the thing is, at this point, I get that.
you know, you don't want to do too much. I said that at the beginning of the episode. Like, they do just enough to kind of not do too much, and I appreciated that. But we're also in a fantasy world, man. Let's let loose a little bit. Let's have some fun. But regardless, the Night King physically has his whites smother the trench across multiple spots. Many whites burn, but the flames are still quickly extinguished and breaching the outer defenses. Thousands of them start swarming around the base of Winterfell's great stone walls, then climb over each in a mass, using their strength to grip into the crevices in the stone. And the Night King makes another run towards the Godswood, but Jon and Daenerys predict where he was headed. Jon spots the Night King and pursues him, and when the Night King approaches the castle walls directly and is just about to strafe Winterfell, Jon attacks him from atop Rhaegal, and Rhaegal clashes with his undead brother, and a battle between the two factions ensues in the skies above Winterfell. And despite having lost so many men out on the field, the castle's walls are a major force multiplier for the defenders, and they kill many more hundreds of wights as they reach the tops of the battlements. Mm-hmm. Even so, more keep coming as the snowstorm reduces the castle to a whiteout amidst the flames, and Jaime Lannister is nearly overwhelmed by a dozen wights, but Brienne carves her way to him using her Valyrian steel sword and saves him. This is always one of my favorite little details, is Jaime and Brienne fighting back-to-back on the walls of Winterfell. Mm-hmm. With swords melted down from Ned's.
Damn, that's really, really cool. And yeah, that shot is just also really cool with like the fire kind of illuminating behind them, and then like them.
This is like one of the only examples of a visual gray haze thing that I like. I never like whenever movies or shows decide to do this, but again, it's one of those things that's earned at Winterfell. We've seen Winterfell, we've been here, we've done a lot of shit here.
Mm-hmm.
You've afforded a gray haze fiery sort of visual palette that I fucking love. It looks good.
And like it's also kind of a story element as well. Like, it is the Night King's storm coming in and putting out all these fires. And it's like, it's not just, you know, I'd say it'd probably be harder to not have that haze and to make everything clear. And, it's definitely harder. But like, I think this, it's actually
it's also harder to shoot something like this beautifully. You know, like, that's the reason gray hazes often look ugly, is because people don't know how to fucking shoot.
Guess because they're not actually capturing that in camera, and it's all added in post.
Yeah.
So it's like, I bet a lot of it, it's like, well, it doesn't look good, so let's put even more haze to hide the bad sort of thing. Exactly. You know, like, like keep adding more and more. But you're right. It did look really good here.
Man. Mm-hmm. Like, whenever Arya comes over the wall and she's like rolling down and she's going on her fucking rampage and the Hound sees it and stuff, like, the sky during that sequence is fucking gorgeous, but like, we'll get there here in a little bit. But Jorah Mormont similarly manages to save Samwell Tarly using Heartsbane, the ancestral Valyrian sword of House Tarly. And Arya manages to pick off many wights with flaming arrows, including one who was trailing Sandor Clegane. Sandor eventually gets inside, gets hidden, and with his severe fear of fire is left frozen as Beric Dondarrion urges him to keep fighting. And Sandor, in a panic, I love the way that he calls him a stupid whore.
Stupid fucking whore. Like, he's like, don't you see that? Like, he's like, I'm scared of fire, you know that, but then look outside as well. He's like, there's no shot. We stand dead. No
we
chance.
Don't stand a fucking chance. And
you
Beric
stupid fucking whore.
Tell her that. I fucking love it. And him immediately getting called to action, him seeing her run into that room and being like,
Must do something now. Yeah.
Fuck yeah. I love it. I love it.
Was the start I put scene selection was a little
very difficult.
In here. And this was kind of one of the little montages. I guess it's not really a scene. It's just kind of a part out of the episode, but it did start here with Arya absolutely popping off. I did love seeing that. And Davos got to like see it too for a little bit. I love Davos is just like on a stairwell, and then he's like watching Arya just like go to town with her new weapon. He was like, holy He was holy like, fucking what the shit. Fuck? Yeah, and then, so that was cool. And then, oh, I guess we haven't, I'll wait on that one. We haven't gotten to one part. But then the Hound, like, being scared and Beric being the one to be like, hey, dude, like, come on, let's do this. It was kind of like a nice, it's still chaotic and it's still battle and still everything's going on, but actual, like, moments are happening here.
Part of the episode, yes. Like, yeah. And that was kind of what was interesting about this one is I don't know how to define scene in stuff like this. Like, it felt like,
yeah, this is one massive scene.
This is one really massive fucking, like, scene with, like, there are a few scenes that interrupt the big montage of scenes, you know, like, like, yeah, the stuff in the crypt, and then what I will eventually pick as my favorite scene. I haven't got there yet, but Melisandre talking to the Hound and Arya in that room when Beric dies. Like, that whole thing, like, that, all of that, those are scenes, and then, like, this sort of stuff where it's all intercut, it's fascinating, because I don't know how to define it as a scene, so to say, but regardless, I think we're about to get to the other part of that, where the tide of the battle turns against the defenders again, and as Lyanna Mormont tries to organize the defense of the main courtyard, a large white giant bashes its way through the main gate and knocks her aside like a rag doll.
Oh,
and
it was, it's just so sad to see every time. Like, it's like
just backhanded out of the way.
Is it sad that it's kind of funny?
Oh, it's funny. Like, it's a little funny.
I hate laughing at it every time, but it's like, oh,
it's just the sound.
God.
Like, it's the sound and the visual. You know,
yes,
like, it's.
I am in no way, like, wanting this to happen, you know, like, in no way, like, Lyanna Mormont, what a, just a badass
this could have
little.
This happened to anybody. Yeah. It's not the fact that it is Lyanna Mormont. In fact, that's the thing that might take away from what's funny about this scene. If this happens to, like, anybody, it's, like, purely funny. Whenever he walks in and is like, you know, like, the fucking, the slap and the scream when they're getting pushed to the side, like, that's, it's a little funny.
Man, imagine you put in that little girl that said, I'll defend the crypt, but imagine it was her. Imagine, like, an actual little girl who, like, should not be there whatsoever. I mean, like, maybe Lyanna, I don't know if she, like, that's the thing, is that, like, yes, she is very set in her ways and she is confident and, like, the people do rally behind her, but, like, she is still just a little girl, you know, like, and facing, I don't know, like, it's like, just morality there. Like, should she really be up there? Like, she doesn't. What is she actually gonna? Well, you know what? I'll take that back, because she does do something here.
Yes, she does.
She
does.
I'll wait.
She gets back
up, words.
Grabs a dragonglass blade and charges at the giant, which she also didn't have to do that, you know? She could have picked up her dragonglass dagger and ran the other fucking way. But she was like, you know what? Nah, this motherfucker's mine. You know, like, love that.
You put your hands on me, you're
dying, bro.
You're done. And I think she knew. Like, she knew what she was doing here. Like, I think.
She got lucky, though.
A little, yeah. The giant could have just stomped on her or, like, thrown her again.
Well, he also pulls her up and puts her right in front of his fucking face. And then, she takes that opportunity, as she's getting crushed, squeezed to death, with her hands still free, with one last defiant cry, she stabs the dragon glass into the white giant's eye. It instantly topples and dies, and Lyanna falls free of his grasp.
Hell.
But also, yes. Legendary shit from Lyanna Mormont there.
And question. Dragon glass dagger. If I just stab, like, say I stab, like, him in the leg.
I don't think it matters. I think
anywhere.
They come in contact with the dragon glass and they're fucked. That's kind of, because it almost looks like a reaction. Like, they get,
like,
touched by it and it,
like,
and it affects the rest of them.
He really didn't need to put her up. Like, she could have just, like,
that's
stabbed
true.
Him in the he foot and he could have anyway. Still died.
That but is, like, interesting to think about, but they're never going to do that because visually,
I like the moment though. No, the moment was so cool, and like, and then, like, seeing the overhead shot of kind of like them both laying there, like, it was
little lady Lyanna Mormont, giant slayer. That's fucking hard. That's fucking cool.
That's right. Who are the only other giant killers we have in the tunnel? The six that held the tunnel. They killed a giant.
Ramsay. Pit,
oh, fuck. Yeah, why does Ramsay have to be in there? Fuck.
Gren. Gren was the one who killed the giant.
Yeah, Gren and the Gren gods aren't here. We are, or whatever. Yeah, a hard fucking, badass. And
night gathers, and now our watch begins. They, like, start reciting the Night's Watch of Offense. He comes. Like, it's hard. Fucking hard.
And now we got another one. We got a little Lady Mormont.
Ramsay and Lyanna Mormont. So a very small group of people there who have killed a giant. We are into the next part of the episode where Winterfell has been overrun and all remaining order of the siege collapses as the white spread to surround any remaining pockets of resistance here and there around the castle. And Arya, who was knocked out against a stone wall, by the way, one of the most viscerally physically affecting scenes of the episode for me. Yeah. When her winterhead fucking clunks.
I mean,
I literally, like, this is a part that has affected me since the first time I watched it, so I always know it's coming. And it happens. It happened last night while I was sitting there, and I went like this. Like, God damn.
I mean, because now with Arya, every time before, you're comfortable. She's just owning shit. You know, like, every time you see her, she is, like, just...
You need to impair her for it to be interesting with her.
Because
she's gonna fucking kill everybody regardless.
And
so now she's got a terrible concussion, and that's what the rest of the episode is like for her.
Never know what's gonna happen, you know? I mean, she was... Think about that. A wounded Arya still got the Night King. But
that's when we get into my favorite scene of the episode. I fucking love the horror version of Silent Library that Arya gets to play. Did you ever watch Silent Library?
I didn't know, but I didn't watch it, but I know the concept.
She gets to play the most fucked up version of Silent Life. It's not like, oh, you lose. It's like, oh, you die.
You die.
If you make a sound. And I love this scene every time, man. Like, it's visually brilliant. I love the shots of, like, the blurred out whites as they're, like, marching through, and, like, part of them is in focus, and the bookshelves, the camera
going in between each one of them, and then, like, stopping. Like, you know, you kind of see the next one for a little bit, so you know if there's someone in that little hallway. But then, like, it stops, and you don't see the next one for a little bit, and you're like, and she's about to go, and you're like, there's a lot of little moments that are even, like,
and it's just
really scary.
She uses every aspect of her training in this episode, which is far and away the coolest thing about Arya. I'm going to be for real. This is my favorite scene. Arya is my favorite character, and Macy Williams is my favorite performance. She's sweeping this shit for me. Okay. I absolutely loved her in this. So, like, I was tempted to go with someone else for performance, but, like, we do spend a lot of time with Arya, dude. Like, we spend a lot of time with Arya and her reactions to things. She obviously doesn't get to say a lot. But that's not that's not important in this episode. It's not important.
Yeah. It's not dialogue performance comes from at all. I have four people here for performance, and I put them in order of who I think actually deserves them the most. And Macy Williams is number one. She was the first one I put down. I just thought, like, holy shit. Like, yes. Like, she is doing
good,
it.
Man. And when it came to character, I wanted to spread the love beyond Red Woman. That was kind of my goal. Because I Red Woman is undoubtedly, one of the top three MVPs and probably the most important. Arya obviously does the fucking deed.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like she's a non-factor. She is the other factor.
But it really is this whole sequence, like, including your scene that you talked about, leading into this, that kind of lent her to my character. And the protection of Sansa at the beginning, being like, go down there, like, it's okay, like, we'll handle shit up here. Like, just a beautiful piece of character work for not a lot of dialogue, which I absolutely adore. But
you're gonna love this. That character nod bumps her up to 9, which ties her perfectly with Sandor Clegane. That's pretty fucking cool. And the only people above them are the 10s, tied. Tyrion Lannister and Oberyn Martell.
Ooh.
And then Daenerys and Jon, obviously up there at the top still. But yeah, I like the tie with the Hound. That's nice. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and I don't know if they'll get any more. That might be it for them. So like they might finish the show like that, which is cool. But
Melisandre, one and done for character. This is her first character, and she won't get another one. She is dead.
I'm pretty sure I've given her a performance, so I think she's gotten a performance and a character.
You know her name?
Yeah, Carice, Carice.
Yes, she has gotten one performance, so that is where
she ended up putting up one in each, which in a show like this,
that's difficult. That's actually difficult, like,
you know, like pulling that off. That's impressive, especially when she played such an unlikable character for so fucking long.
Yeah. Wow. Man, what an arc for her. Like crazy.
This is the perfect fulfillment of the arc for Melisandre. Like this is, it feels the same for Arya. Like it feels like I said, she's using every aspect of her training. She's doing water dancing. She's doing faceless men stuff here. She does faceless men stuff later on when she kills the Night King. Like, there's all sorts of stuff she's utilizing. But yeah, whenever she like slides across the room and climbs under the table and she doesn't make a fucking sound, but then the blood drips and that's what alerts them. Like that's
you know, you're quiet.
Yeah.
When the blood dripping is the only sounds you're making. That's she is a weapon, dude. Yeah. She's Batman. She's oh my God. She's a literal ninja. Like
she is. Dude, and I love one of my favorite moments of the episode. Just, and I'm not a huge gore guy, or like, I don't love gore, but I do love zombies, and I love zombie killing. Like, that's awesome shit to me. So when she comes around the corner, when she makes it out, and one of the whites is about to make a noise, and she just stabs her through the throat, up through his mouth, and the blood comes pouring out of the mouth and the throat. Like, that's not the sort of thing that I'm into. Yeah. I hate that typically. That's sort of the stuff that I always want to like close, but they're so satisfying
about it was awesome.
Doing it that it's so fucking cool. Like it's so cool. But yeah, it's mostly because it's a zombie. If it's ever a real person with gore, it's always like, but zombies, I'm like, that's like the gore that I can be with, I can get with, because like they're already dead, you know, like they're dead.
Yeah, human, they spit up like red, like blood, and it's like deep red, and like that's just something different, but like, it's just like black, kind of tar, like, it's just it's just like, whatever. And it kind of felt like a mercy kill almost a little bit. Like she laid her down, like, so like, I guess not to make a sound. That's kind of the important part, actually. Duh. Hello. But,
dude, but again, and then the sequence that follows whenever she gets outside the door and she hears whites coming.
Yeah.
They close burst the door slowly. That alerts the whites that were in the library that they burst through the door. So they come bursting through the door. And then it's really this part that cinches her performance nod for me, is her running through the halls of Winterfell. We do not get to see Maisie Williams fearful. She is never afraid of shit in this entire show. And what she's doing here is probably the best scared besides Rory McCann as the Hound in the entire episode. Like those I would say they're the top two in terms of performing that like horrified sort of thing.
Sleeper I didn't think of for performance, but
he's good in this one too. But I remember this piece of promo for season 8. Do you remember like this clip of her running
through through the halls,
everyone kind of being like,
what does that mean?
Scaring like, Arya that bad? And like, it was only one option. You know? Like, it had to be the Army of the Dead. So like, it was so cool to just remember all these sorts of things as I was watching it, like how I felt watching it for the first time, and how season 8 coming up, how we were all theorizing about everything. Like, it was so fucking cool. But, she makes her way through, and ultimately she runs into Sandor and Beric, who are also trying to sneak through Winterfell looking for Arya. That was their goal, was trying to find Arya. However, also fleeing whites and help fight them off. The trio make a running retreat through the narrow hallways of the castle's interior. And eventually Beric is stabbed multiple times, and he gets some real Christ-like imagery.
Yeah, like it, I love that he just also makes it in the room with him afterwards. Oh, yeah. Like he like obviously
yeah, he does.
He like he obviously kind of like stays behind to like block all of the dead to like kind of getting from them, you know, sort of thing. Like it seemed that it was he was going for like a sacrifice play, you know, like no, go on without me, I won't make it, you know, sort of thing. But then it's just like no, he just kind of stumbles in the room right afterwards and whatever.
That was one of the examples of like you said at the beginning of the episode, like they're just on a set. Like it is hilarious to think about like the performance that Eric is putting on there.
Oh,
like
wow.
Him stumbling through the door and collapsing to the ground. Like they said action, and that was what they had to do was run through That's the fair. Door and he had to stumble. Like
yeah, the dude actually did not get stabbed 500 times. And like and to be fair, anyone in the world, this dude right here is the most used to being stabbed. Out of anyone,
true.
I, like literally, there's no better person to be stabbed repeatedly over and over.
Been hanged.
I gotta imagine. Like, I gotta imagine that, like, because he keeps all of his scars and everything internally. That dude has to just be like scar tissue. There's no actual anything left. So, like, when he's getting stabbed, it's not even like doing damage. Really, it's just like, yeah, I've been stabbed there before.
Old wounds. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that's my headcanon for him being totally fine after being stabbed.
Yeah.
You know, by just over and over. It's just like, well, out of anyone in the world,
he meets a similar fate as his boy Thoros. He doesn't get a last word in, which. You know, it is what it is. But well, his last word, I think he might have said something to Arya amidst the running through the halls and stuff.
He does just get a look at Arya
and his fucking sword, and he throws it and saves Arya. Like MVP shit right there. Like I love that the fulfillment of the Lord of Light sort of arc happens here. Like all of them, all have their. This is what it's been for, and I absolutely love that. Like that's so.
This is why the Hound and Arya's relationship was a thing, you know, in the first place, so that he would break out of his fear and actually go to save her. Beric has been brought back so many times over and over just to make sure that Arya is alive for this moment. You know, it's like it's kind of shitty to look at it that way, you know, like Beric's whole life is just for this one moment here, but it's like he still had his whole life
moment.
You know,
like that's a high purpose, you know.
You know what,
like,
actually
you are
I wouldn't be too
mad alive so that you can so that the army of the dead can be laid to rest permanently.
You know what,
you know,
okay. Yeah, actually
that's a
pretty badass
big purpose. That's more purpose than a lot of people can ask for, you know. A lot of people only get
Fair
to
enough.
Die once, you know, but eventually, you know, Beric stumbles through those doors along with Sandor and Arya, and he succumbs to his injuries, ultimately standing above him. But Arya and Sandor also find Melisandre waiting in the room, which does indicate there was a degree of, like, a vision, like she knows where she needs to be, she knows what's coming, she knows what has to happen.
Oh, funny you guys should show up here.
Fancy meeting you here. She says Beric has fulfilled his purpose for the Lord of Light. And Arya recalls that they've met before, and Melisandre said that they would meet again. And Melisandre reminds Arya that she said Arya would close many eyes forever. Brown eyes, green eyes, and blue ones. And
oh
asks
my God.
Arya. Yeah.
So no, I just made a no. It's not even. It's not what you're thinking whatsoever. I'm going down a completely different road. Did Melisandre? Okay, Gendry and Melisandre. I know that she just put the leeches on him and whatever. But like, did they ever actually do anything sexual, like whatsoever? Yeah. So she just got naked. There was no actual like. Because I was about to say that Arya and Melisandre. They could have been Eskimo sisters, or I don't know what's the like Eskimo bro. I don't know if there's like a.
No, yeah, it's a shame.
Email like equivalent
for
that.
I think it's sisters. I think it's just flopping the name there. But yeah, I saw a discourse a couple weeks ago that was like, it's such a great idea to have a name for that, but it sucks that it's like it's accompanied by like by what is now known as a slur of sorts. Like,
oh, is that really?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. Oh, yeah, no, I did not know that.
Okay. Like, I just want to let you know, inform you, because it sucks, because that's a great idea. We should have a name for people like that who have had sex with the same people. And it doesn't even make sense. Like, why is that the fucking...
Yeah, like, isn't that just... Yeah, what just a Inuit weird...
Inuit people.
Like, that's always what I've thought. And like, okay, this makes more sense that it is like a slur now that I know. Yeah. Like, it always has just been a weird word to me. But okay, sorry to everyone there. But now this is a learning moment for me.
A learning moment. It's important. Yeah, I'm trying to. I don't know the history behind it or why it's not socially acceptable. But I just know that's what I've learned. Okay. In recent years. So future reference.
Good, but yeah, it's a good learning that's, moment. Was not going down the green eye, brown eye, blue eye route whatsoever. I was just like, literally trying to think.
Same guy?
Of like, did Melisandre, you know, just...
Have they been funny
that the last time they met was whenever she took Gendry away, right? Like, that's the only time they've met, is like
that's
that little moment.
Cross paths.
And then eventually Gendry comes back. That's the only... person Arya's ever fucked or, you know, had sex with, and now, like, it's, I don't know, it's kind of just this.
No, they've got like the intricacies sort of thing, the of the universe are really, really interesting. I always love it. But you know, Arya the Hound and Melisandre mount against her, and Melisandre leans into Arya and asks, "What do we say out of death?" And Arya responds, "Not today." And she just goes,
love it, man. I love this shit. That was my line. I mean, there were many lines that made me feel like, oh yes, like sticking with the pointy end. That was like a nice callback. It didn't hit as hard as this one quite, but almost there. And a few other ones that were like, oh man, what? Like the history behind this one line is insane. And this one just has a whole, like it's Arya's whole arc, but then also it's like, how the fuck you know that, Melis? You know, like what's up with that? Is Cirio Pharrell and Jock and Hagar a little more connected than we once thought? You know, is Melisandre pulling the strings behind Jock and Hagar, maybe? Or is it could all just be the fucking god that's doing this shit anyways? But
Wyatt, are they all the same fucking guy? I think so.
The story writer. Ideally, is who it is at the end of the day. But in universe,
what
God,
do you say to the god of death?
Mm-hmm.
Not today. Love that shit.
And let's fucking go. I'm hyped now. And
let's get it. Let's head back above the castle where the dragons are locked in a battle in the sky above Winterfell, with Jon and the Night King fighting in fierce close quarters, midair brawl on their dragons. A Viserion badly claws Rhaegar's belly. And that was another one of those moments that kind of made me flinch, like, oh, god damn. Like, that's visceral. And while the Night King readies another one of his dragon-killing ice javelins, hilarious imagery. It's always so fucking funny. He's just on the back of the dragon, like, he's getting fucking flung around because, like, they're on the back. And so he's just kind of like, god damn, I can't get a shot. I can't get a clear shot.
Hold steady, you stupid thing. God, like, oh my
damn it,
god.
Yeah, no, it's hilarious. But the dragons are swirling around so chaotically he can't get a good shot. And despite his wounds, Rhaegal manages to land a bite on Viserion and tears the left half of his face off. Leads to some really cool imagery where Viserion can't control his fire, can't keep it in, so it's just bursting out. Very cool
love
stuff.
Love that.
But again, this is not enough to stop him. It is, however, enough to significantly distract the Night King, who doesn't notice Daenerys' approach on Drogon, and they collide with Viserion with such impact that the Night King is spilled from his mount. While Drogon tears into Viserion, Rhaegal, however, is badly wounded enough that he needs to make a forced landing, dropping Jon on the ground before fleeing. And Drogon sends badly injured Viserion crashing into the castle while Jon regains himself on the ground, finding he is on the abandoned outer battlefield and not far from the Night King, who is proceeding on foot to the breach in the walls leading to the God's Wood and Brand. And Daenerys reaches the Night King, and with the command of Dracarys, Drogon blasts.
Oh, that's right. That does happen first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the music swells. I remember watching this for the first time and going, So that's not how he dies then, you know, like we're too early in this episode.
It sticks on him for a little bit too long afterwards, too. The fire's just a little, you know, they're staying on it for a little too long. And the music isn't right. You know, it's not like, we just won. This is like,
it shifts into whenever he like gets fully shown and it shifts into like that, like low rumbling, like,
this little itty bitty, like, you know, like, did he know that he was going to survive that? You know, did the Night King, like, maybe he was like, well, this could be it. I don't know. And then
he doesn't know. Nobody's ever tried it before, as Bran says, you know, like,
So I think like he has no clue what's coming. And then afterwards, it's gotta feel like a Luke's, you know, but Luke in The Last Jedi, he knew that he was just a projection. He knew he wasn't going to die well whatsoever.
Right.
But it felt kind of like the, you know, brushing, like, you know, come at, you know, is that all you got sort of moment. But in this case, he for real didn't know if he was going to die or not. But I think, like, if I was the Night King, I would feel pretty safe, you know, against anything fire.
I think he had a good idea he would be fine. You know, there is the chance, you know, he's like, I guess this has never happened before. Maybe I can't stand up to Dragonfire.
But I love I put him in here. I don't think I will go with him for the episode, but I wanted to give him some nods just for performing Vladimir Furdick? Furdick?
Furdick.
Furdick. I think that's kind of hilarious, but sorry for butchering your name, but you definitely, I don't know, I like, you don't say a single word, but I love your just menacing look and little grins that you give and little,
It is a good physical performance. It's a little, I mean, it's harrowing. He does a really good job. And I think that, you know, a lot of people wanted the Night King to talk at some point. Which, I mean, I wouldn't have been opposed to, but I don't think it actually actively takes away from him that he doesn't.
What do you think would he say, like, one line? Would he have, like, a conversation? Like, that's the thing. I don't even know what I would want him to say.
I literally, I would have wanted to hear one thing, and it would have been in the season 7 finale when he's at the wall and Viserion is hovering there. If the Night King could have gone, Dracarys, and it would have been the only thing he said, that would have been fucking pimp, you know? That would have been fucking pimp. I don't even know what it would sound like. I imagine it would be deep and menacing and be funny if he was just like,
Dracarys! Yeah, like just the most child voice out of nowhere. For some reason in my head, I thought this was Ray Park. I don't know why. Maybe it's just like Maul
connection.
And like just the opposite.
He's got the horns,
like,
on his head, you know,
it would be really cool if this was Maul or like Ray Park, because like the just polar opposites of the characters. Mm-hmm. But no, it's not Ray Park. I don't know why I had that in my head, but good old Vladimir. I wanted just to
He also played the White at the Battle of Hardhome that Jon fights. He's also the guy who they show get the dragonglass dagger shoved into his chest. They maintain that guy being the Night King pretty much all the way through.
That's cool.
He's I'm pretty sure he was a stunt coordinator for the show. He was a stunt coordinator for the show. He could do a lot of the cool, like, White Walker movements. So they were just kind of like, you want to be the fucking Night King? And and he was. So, and
he
it's
the army of the dead.
Outstanding that's so, it's all almost practical.
The makeup and everything. Yeah.
It's not like that is on him, which is, I mean, like,
and the armor.
It looks so natural. It can only be practical, but the idea that is literally on a human guy is insane, you know?
That is true.
It was the same makeup studio that did Stranger Things season 4, the fucking
Mind Flayer, is that?
No,
or is that
not
the
Mind
previous?
It's the fucking the new guy, the one who's got like the creepy crawly skin, and I feel like it starts with some weird, like it's some weird fucking name.
What season? Which one?
I think it's 4.
Vecna.
Is
that it?
Vecna. Yeah.
Okay.
They did Vecna right. Like that whole fucking okay. So like they're the makeup artists who did this are very they're very cooking. Fucking talented. Yeah.
They are cooking over there. But his armor, I don't know, I kind of looked more at their armor this time, like, and I was wondering if, like, cuz like the White Walkers, I guess some of them are Crasters, babies, or whatever, but obviously the Night King isn't, so, like, some of them are human, some of them are whatever, but, like, the armor on the White Walkers is, like, uniform. Like, they all have the same armor. It's not, like, mm-hmm. the armor of the person that was wearing, you know, that was just dead or whatever, and they just took that person's armor. Like, this looks like
they forge it, yeah.
They made this armor. Like, and before, I'm like, they're ice spears. It just feels like they could, like, just put their arm out and just make one, like if they wanted to, you know? So, like, right. I've never thought about anything further than that, but their armor, like, leads me to believe that, like, and this is a TV show. They're obviously not just going to be, like, naked or whatever, but, like, it leads you to believe more, like, they have, like, some civilization back there. They have blacksmiths. They have, like, you know, like, because they had symbols on the armor, you know, like the Night King had a different symbol versus the other White Walkers and his other people. So could just be a TV show and just a costume department thing that, you know, they're just doing it like that. But I don't know. It was really cool to, it's a way to give them some mythos without saying anything and having to do anything. But I thought it was just really cool to get like this close up look, and it more so when they walk into the Godswood and like you're seeing them all right there side by side. But I don't know, I thought it was really cool to like their just design, everything. It really, they gave him a really cool look, and even though he doesn't say anything, he doesn't really need to. He's just
that guy.
Death. Yeah, he is just death.
When the smoke dissipates, Bran's warning is proven unfortunately correct. Even Dragonfire cannot kill the Night King, who is completely undamaged, and he still has one ice javelin left, and he readies to throw it at Drogon. And Daenerys flees, narrowly dodging the shot.
Eesh. Yeah.
But after this, Jon decides it's time to pursue. But just as he is about to reach him, the Night King silently turns to him, to which Jon decides it's time to stop in his tracks, because I don't know. There's decisions John makes when running that are stupid. The dude doesn't know how to run. He can't think and run at the same time.
Fair. I guess, what is he about to do? Resurrect. Yes, we know. But like, maybe he was about to do something different. You know, like maybe John's like, I don't know what this guy's capable of. Maybe he's about to freaking throw a huge snowball at me somehow. I don't know. But no, you're right. This was kind of a...
No, yeah, I'm like, just keep running, bro. He turned around. You planned on fighting him anyway. Fucking go at him.
Your goal is to go at the guy, and this is the guy you need to kill. So, you know, but it does make for...
It makes for a good scene. It does.
Very cool moment.
When he realizes what he's doing, that's when he decides he's going to keep running at him.
That is true. He does stop and he's like, oh, you are actually doing the thing. I should be running right now.
I should be running. Yeah. And it's not like the distance he's at once he does get fully ready. I don't think he would have made it there anyway, but he would have been closer. You know, it would have been a little bit more of like a, like if they could have done like an inner cutting of like him raising his arms and John trying to get to him and him raising his arms and him trying to get it to him. And then they cut to him like an eye opening and then them getting like, there's just a,
I see.
I like the ominousness of the scene. I like the way they play the slow play up, but it's just I don't know. I feel like it could have been a little more. Mostly just because I wanted a Night King and John face off, and the fact that we never really got it, and the fact that I like the idea that the way we never get it is the Night King's too big of a pussy to.
I think it's if we do get that fight, the Night King doesn't make it out. Like I think even if there is a situation where they do get separated and it's kind of just a draw, but even like John clearly won the battle, like he would have won and the Night King had to escape, I think people still would have been like, they wouldn't have liked that. I think it is honestly better that John just never got the opportunity like to even face him. But it seems that that's what they're building towards, and like that this is the fight you want to see.
It's a shame that in the final battle of the Whites, John's essentially a non-factor. Like, that does suck, you know?
Wow.
It's just kind of like, it's what his whole arc has, whereas the conclusion of this arc for the Lord of Light side of things, Melisandre, Arya, Beric Dondarrion, the Hound, it all feels so complete. It feels right. This is how their story is supposed to end. I can absolutely see how people are a little not cool with the way it ends for Jon, because this has been his storyline since season one. Like, this is what his story has been building to.
Wow. Yeah, they're doing a little bit of Dune without even realizing, like, the women are for real the ones responsible for all the wins. Like, yeah, Battle of the Bastards, that's not actually Jon. Like, he does a lot of cool shit in there, but, yeah. Like, Sansa is the win. The win here.
The Bene Gesserits are really lurking, you know?
Melisandre and Arya. Who else has a bigger impact? And Daenerys. Daenerys, Arya, Melisandre. Tell me who has a bigger impact on this battle than those three.
Nobody. That's the crew, you know? Like, it really is. But,
man. Wow, yeah, Jon did. Oh, I didn't really.
Yeah, Jon gets sidelined hard in season 8.
Eesh.
And it's a tough thing to kind of rationalize. I ultimately love the very end of his story. But the work they do with Jon's character, it's underwhelming. Mm. Underwhelming in season 8. And that really sucks. Wow. But
Wow.
Yeah, but Jon finds himself surrounded again and struggles to fight off the New Whites as the Night King continues into the Godswood. But in the crypt, Sansa and the others can hear a handful of living men desperately pounding on the heavy doors to let them in, but they know they cannot risk a flood of Whites passing the barricade, and they hear the men's cries quickly silence. And the Whites themselves cannot find a way in, but there are plenty of dead bodies in the crypts for the White Walkers to reanimate, and suddenly many of the interred corpses rise as the Whites start clawing their way out of tombs, and they are fairly old and not in the best shape, but the women and children are totally unarmed, and many succumb to the Whites. Sansa and Tyrion hide behind one tomb, contemplating on helping the women and children in the fight against the newly made Whites in the crypt with the dragon glass they were given.
I don't get this now, but on first watch, I'm curious. This, like, I literally thought that they were making like a suicide pact sort of thing. And I'm like, are we about to like say goodbye to some, like, is this how they're going to go? I still
think that's kind of what they're agreeing on. They're not agreeing to kill themselves right here.
It's just go fight until we die. Like, it's,
yeah, like they're agreeing that this is what we need to do and we might die doing it. You know, like, so it's not a literal suicide pact, but I do think it's them accepting that they may die here.
Yes. It's not like, okay, clearly we're not just going to slit our throats here. Yeah, you know, like that's not what we're doing.
That is what I thought the first time I watched it. And it looks like that, man. And this is when the best piece of music for the entire show starts kicking in. When they're sitting there, The Long Night starts to play by Ramin Djawadi. That piano is fucking nasty. That bum, 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 ba-dum.
Dude's nutty with the keys. Yeah. Isn't he also Westworld? That, like, isn't that him? Yeah. Dude's got it with the piano. Yeah. He's, man. No, this was the start of my other.
This part of the episode might be the best part of the entire fucking show. Like, it's one of the best.
It's what I'll go with. Like, it is just.
It's like 10 minutes of them.
Kind of unfair to like choose it as like a
that's
scene.
Why I'm like, I didn't go. Like, I will acknowledge it as my favorite part of the episode. I just don't. I don't know how to declare it a scene. I don't know when a scene starts and stops.
Yeah.
In this sort of scenario.
I have Tyrion and Sansa defending the crypt. I also have Theon defending Bran and Jon screaming at Viserion.
Dead dragon, yeah.
So that's, it's a lot, you know, and it leads literally right before the Night King dies is like,
yeah, it's
leading
the last,
up to, so.
It's 10 of the last 12 minutes of the episode. So like it's a long chunk, but it's fucking good, man. It's great. I love the tension they build. The editing is brilliant. The visuals are excellent. But as Jon fights off his surrounding Whites, Daenerys appears with Drogon and burns them up from the air. And Jon calls to Daenerys, planning to pursue the Night King, and Daenerys tells Jon to go. And after Jon follows the Night King, Daenerys and Drogon land, but stay on the ground for moments too long, finding Drogon being swarmed by dozens of wights. And he just barely manages to fly away, still covered in them. But Daenerys is knocked off his back in the process. However, Jorah. Jorah, baby. Jorah appears and helps Daenerys fight off the wights, and Daenerys picks up a dragonglass sword from the ground. But they are both exhausted, and more wights surround them again. Jon, meanwhile, fights his way back to the courtyard on the castle on foot, only to be pinned down by the grounded but still very dangerous Viserion. And this whole sequence, his march, he gets a really cool hallway scene where it's not as like badass as like some other hallway scenes, but him getting through, killing a couple, wights crashing through the ceiling, crashing through the walls, and him closing the fucking door.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my fucking God, dope, dude. Yeah. Like, when the ceiling collapsed on him, it kind of felt like an accident. Like, it felt like he might not have supposed to have fallen, like, on set, but he did, and it just kind of, I don't know, it works either way, like, if it was planned or not.
I remember watching the documentary on the making of season 8 because it was the big send off, entirely choreographed. Like, that was a very meticulously planned out
part of
the episode. Like, they spend a good chunk of the documentary showing how they did that, and it's like,
that's awesome,
because it's a beautiful sequence. Like, it's mostly practical, obviously. Like, Jon's not actually getting crushed by stuff falling from the ceiling. They do need to do something to kind of make that look a little more intense. I remember specifically the way they did, like, the slamming of the gate and all of the, like, whites, like, reaching through.
Yeah. Is that real people, or is that just
some of it is, and some of it is, like, animatronic. Like, some of it is, like, because, like, they move in kind of, like, a unison sort of, like, like, they're wiggling their hands and stuff. It's cool. But regardless, Jon has a little face off with Viserion, and a stab from Jon's Valyrian steel sword might kill the undead dragon, but it is simply too volatile to approach. Badly wounded beyond the point of a living dragon, would have expired, and the huge rents in his body leak great bursts of fire as it continues to crash around the rubble.
What a great choice just to do this. Like, this
I love it. The only thing that would have made this better is if Jon had actually killed this fucking dragon.
I know he got burned from the lantern earlier. God, if they could have had a moment of, like, to solidify that he is a Targaryen that is unburnt and I wanted him, Viserion, like him, how the Night King got burnt, you know, Daenerys burning him. I wanted the parallel.
It's so fucking cold to get, like, a parallel with that, with Daenerys, but a parallel with his fight with, like, Ramsay. You know, like, whenever he, like, sticks up the shield and he just keeps walking towards him and he keeps doing it. But, like, if he's just hammering him with fire and he just...
fire and just unfazed, just keep walking.
Like, that'd be so pimp. That'd be so pimp.
Ooh. Wow.
But, but even so, I would have loved for him to kill the dragon and it not be an immunity thing. Like, if he doesn't get to face off with the Night King, let him slay the fucking dragon. That only thing we've never seen in Game of Thrones is a human just fucking slay a dragon, which would have been fucking awesome. You know, like,
where he is such
a non-factor, why not just give it to him? Why not just go ahead and tell him?
The dragon's going to die anyways at the end when the Night King dies. Like, it died. It just falls and it just lands in front of Jon. And Jon's like, oh, okay. Well, that's good. You know, like,
I'm imagining him finding a way up through the castle battlements and, like, jumping off and getting, like, a fucking just right in the throat and then sliding all the way down. Like, that would have been gnarly.
We need a fan remake or something. That's too good. Holy crap.
So, again, I'm going with the stuff that would be cool. It's just that and this sequence is already good. Like, I don't want to undersell it. It's just that given John's kind of being sidelined throughout the last season, it would have been nice for him to get one last epic moment, which I don't think you can say he gets. I think that, like, the last epic moment he has is season 7, episode 6. And even that, it's not even really... I'm talking like badass. Like, he does get some pretty iconic visual great moments. Like, when he...
Battle of the Bastards is definitely, undoubtedly, yes, for sure. But since then...
He's been cool. He's been bold. You know, like, I love whenever he's like, he decides he's going to north of the wall. Like, that shit's cool. You know, like that. But like, in terms of in a battle, doing the fucking cool shit, I don't think he gets another one after Battle of the Bastards. And it would have been nice if he could have, if you're not going to let him kill the Night King, which is cool. I like Arya killing the Night King. I'm personally a big fan of that idea. And I like, it's just doing it for the sake of subverting expectations that it would be Jon. I'm not entirely cool with, but
yeah,
working for Arya's story does. So like, if Jon could have done something, bro, just something, I would have loved it. But Jon is hastily forced to die for cover as Viserion catches sight of him and lets loose a torrent of fire and incinerating the courtyard, which barely misses Jon. And facing certain death and with the battle seemingly lost, Jon emerges from his hiding place and resolving to die with what courage he can muster. Bellows defiance at Viserion as the undead dragon's jaws gape open, either to devour Jon or blast him with flame. All the while, wights advance through Winterfell's Godswood and are picked off by Theon's archers one by one. Each of the defenders is killed, including Alys Karstark, until only Theon is left, taking out a dozen or more wights until he runs out of arrows. And suddenly the wights stop, forming a ring around the Weirwood tree, and step aside to make a path for the Night King himself, followed along by other White Walkers and a horde of wights, some of them temporarily halted by the Night King. Bran Stark turns to Theon and says, "You are a good man. Thank you." And finding redemption for his past crimes against Bran and Winterfell, and no longer afraid to die, Theon grabs a spear and courageously charges at the Night King. Of course, it was not enough, and I think he knew it wouldn't be enough. Got to try.
Yeah. A lot of people were like, really? This is the play you make and whatever? This is, he knows he's dead. If you're going to go out, I'm going out like this, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going out charging the main motherfucker to see if I could. Like, that's, I'm,
if you can, you save the fucking world.
Yeah. Like, you know, I am going to die, but on the off chance that I touch that man with this spear, he's dead, you know? Like, maybe he chucks it, you know? Maybe that's kind of more the play. You run, and then kind of at the last second, you just throw it. But hey, you know, he's dying here.
On him. I feel like he just kind of be like, you know, like,
I mean,
he did catch.
I mean, that's what he did do. Like,
yeah,
Theon was running. He was just full on. Like, Night King was like, all right, whatever. And then he just gets there. Catches it, snaps it in half, and then stabs Theon with it. So
Theon is granted probably the longest death scene in the entire show here also, by the way.
They really do show. Yeah.
They really, really let it breathe. Slow motion all the way through, all the way up to him getting stabbed, and then they show him on the ground.
Yeah, the Night King, like, looking over him
for a couple seconds. And he's just bleeding and bleeding and bleeding, and then he dies. So, like, it's probably a good minute that we spend with him fucking dying.
Yeah. That's why I gave Alfie Allen. He was another one of my nods. It went Macy Williams first, then Kit Harington, and then Alfie Allen was my order that I went in. So Macy Williams might deserve the double here. I don't know, but to spread the love, I might give it to Kit, even though he didn't get really good, man. Yeah. He didn't get a moment in the episode, you know. Now that you say that, it kind of stings a little bit that Jon, you know, kind of the main.
He doesn't really get a moment in the entire fucking season.
But I do like him here, so I think I'll spread the love. I think Macy Williams is definitely the one, but I do like to spread the love a little bit. I'll give Kit,
with no one left to defend Bran. The Night King walks slowly towards him at the base of the tree, and the music picks up again. Fucking love it. Bum, 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 ba, bum. Like, it's just fucking swelling, dude. I love this song. Bran looks up at his foe with pity. The Night King staring down at his age-old nemesis and the three-eyed raven in triumph. And as the Night King draws the sword sheathed on his back for the killing blow, a sudden wisp of wind catches the attention of one of his White Walker lieutenants. And the shot of him reaching for his sword and Arya emerging, fucking dope. And he turns around, spins, and catches her by the throat in one hand and her wrist in the other. He only has a moment to leer at her before she drops the dagger out of her left hand and catches it with her still free right hand and drives the blade into his chest, shattering him into icy shards. And with the Night King destroyed, the other White Walkers shatter as well, and in turn, every white falls. All around Winterfell, the surviving and surrounded defenders see the white suddenly drop and fall apart, the magic animating their dead flesh and sinews departing. And the undead Viserion dies for the final time in the courtyard, saving Jon Snow. The whites attacking Jorah and Daenerys drop dead, but Jorah is fatally wounded defending Daenerys. And he dies in the arms of the woman he loves as Daenerys cries while holding him. My top two was Emilia Clarke. Emilia Clarke's performance here was fucking gutting.
Okay, that is really good. And you can tell Jorah was trying to get out a last I love you, but could not, you know.
There's a moment. I this is one of my favorite deaths in the show. I love Jorah going out here. It's really one of, like, I also loved Jorah throughout the show. Whenever the whites are coming up behind them and he pushes Danny out, you think he's going to like swing his sword up, but he literally pushes her out of the way so that the white would stab him. Like, that's all, like, and the wound on his chest after it is so, like, dude.
Yeah. It's so like, fucking cool. But he's still going. And then he knows when the fight is over, it's like a marathon runner. It's like, he's like,
until he knows Daenerys is safe, and like legendary shit from Jorah Mormont. If it wasn't Arya, it was going to be Jorah. So like, if it wasn't Arya, it was going to be Emilia Clarke. If it wasn't Arya, it was going to be Jorah for me. But I gave Jorah the character nod episode because I didn't think I would get to do it again. So I was like, you know what? I'll spread the love a little bit more.
I like that. I definitely slept on him. That's for sure. He's definitely up there. Yeah, it's I guess I was more focused on like screen time and more on screen, but as far as like substance, they definitely, holy shit.
Yeah, he got the fucking, and it's one of Emilia Clarke's strongest moments, man. Whenever she's sobbing, holding him there, like, that's, it's heavy, man. It's really fucking good. But Drogon, who survived the whites, curls himself around them to comfort his mom as she mourns. It's a really, really sweet moment there as well. But the whites fall in the crypts as well, saving Tyrion, Sansa, and the others. And the ancient threat of the White Walkers has been destroyed forever. Dawn finally breaks over the devastated castle, and Melisandre walks out of the gate, removing her cloak. And Davos follows, ready to kill her with his dagger. But Melisandre, however, removes her magical choker and drops it on the ground. The glow from its gem fading out, and Davos is astonished to see from a distance that she is now a centuries-old woman, having used up all of her magical power, summoning the fires to defend the castle. She takes a few more faltering steps, then collapses, crumbling into dust.
Imagine being Davos, man. The biggest battle of all time just got done. No moment to celebrate. No moment to...
I gotta go kill this bitch.
I'm still on my he's still on his mission. I don't know. I thought that's just hilarious, but also, fuck's this stone? What she got going on here? Is this the reality stone here? Is this the, what is this stone, man? Theory that it doesn't mean anything. The comet that goes, at the beginning, it's just a fragment from that comet. It's like the only thing I could ever see it being, but it doesn't matter. Cool death though. I really like the Red Woman. I don't know how I haven't seen it before, but like
a great punctuation mark on the ending of this episode too. Like when she collapses and it cuts to black, fucking brilliant. Like I get chills just thinking about it, man. Like I got the
Man, just the piles of bodies too that she has to walk through was like, oh my god. Like visually, like this episode was nuts. Like they were cooking. Like they knew
with fucking gas in this one, man. Like that's what I love about Miguel Sapochnik as a director. He also directed Battle of the Bastards and Battle of Hard Home and This is kind of his lane, is the giant battle episodes. He directs episode 5 of season 8 as well. So, like, he's got a heavy hand in some of the most grand and epic episodes of Thrones. But his visual sensibility, no matter how big it gets, like, it always has this raw intimacy that I think is really, really effective. It's always really well lit. And I think that that's, I got to give some credit to Fabian Wagner there as well, the director of photography on this episode. He also shot Zack Snyder's Justice League. Eight episodes of Thrones, including the Battle of Hardhome, the Battle of the Bastards and the Winds of Winter, and the Long Night and the Bells, season 8, episode 5. So,
okay. Okay. Yeah, that man, he's got a good track record on the show. Yeah. That's for sure. But man, yeah, we've been waiting a long time. We finally got here. It's crazy to get here with all the previous knowledge I've had of the show, but then I have this newfound appreciation for this episode now, you know, also, even more. It's,
you watched Sherlock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Best season of that show, season 2, Moriarty.
Oh yeah.
Three episodes, all shot by Fabian Wagner as well.
Okay. Yeah, I like Fabian. This dude knows what he's doing.
You can fucking film some fucking shit, man. That's a talented photographer right there. Also, 3 episodes of House of the Dragon, including the first episode, season 1, episode 6, and season 1, episode 7. Very, very, very fantastic director of photography, Fabian Wagner. And I think it paid off big time. The Long Night took like 30, was it 30? It might have been 60. Like, it was like 2 months of
days.
Night shoots.
Oh my god! Oh my god! Yeah,
night shoots,
because you can only do it at night. Duh! You can't be doing. Yeah. Oh my god.
Yeah, 55 nights of filming over 11 weeks.
It really was the Long Night. Like, it for really was. That's a lot of work.
750 cast and crew.
Oh my!
It was a moving shoot that had to adjust with the moon. Several actors described the episode as the hardest thing they've ever done. Macy Williams said that nothing can prepare you for how physically draining it is. It is night after night and again, and it just doesn't stop. You can't get sick, and you have to look out for yourself because there's so much to do that nobody else can do. There are moments you're just broken as a human and just want to cry. Ian Glenn described it as a real test, really miserable. You get to sleep at 7 in the morning, and when you wake up in the midday, you are still so spent you can't really do anything. And then you're back. You have no life outside of it. Rory McCann concurred, saying, "Everybody prays they never have to do this again." Glenn did add that it was only worse for the crew, since unlike the actors, they had to be on set at all times. The crew has to be constantly. If the actors aren't filming scenes, they don't have to be there.
Props to everybody.
Everybody
that
involved
in there.
This is a really good example of why everyone didn't want to do the show anymore. Because this was obviously the most extreme example of it. Of course, like, this is the most extreme example of how hard it is to make the show. But this was the sort of shit they would do. They shot on location. It wasn't some warehouse where they had to, you know, they could just light it like it was night and go ahead and shoot, make it a nice convenient shoot. No, they did 55 nights over 3 months, 11 weeks. Like, that's insane shit right there. Because you do a full week of night shoots, what's your weekend? It doesn't exist. You just maintain that sleeping schedule, because if you don't, you lose your fucking mind.
Like, maybe this is why we didn't get John killing Viserion or like a crazy epic shot, is because like everything else we got, it took 2 months for him to do. Like, imagine how much longer. Like, if they do shots like that, they're going to want to do it right, and they're going to do it in the Game of Thrones fashion. So, like, okay, logistics of making an episode. Yeah, that's
like season 8, a normal movie shoot.
That's what I was going to say. How long does it take to make a movie?
It's typically about 60 days.
Yeah.
They made one episode in 55 nights. Like, that's insane. That's insane.
Oh my God. No, that I did not know it took that long. That's incredible. Man, yeah, I'm looking at the deaths at the very end. We've gotten there. Only one first, Martha. A little bird. A little bird from Viserion, I guess. A northern whisper, a little bird from whatever. But the deaths, they are in order in which they happen.
Mm.
But oh my God, it's crazy the people we said goodbye to. Good old Ed, the first one, you know, a little unceremonious a little bit, but.
No, I mean, like, if there was anyone. I was kind of hoping, like, in a battle like this, someone like that should have died on the front fucking lines. Like, as soon as they do the swarm, like, somebody's fucking dead, bro. Like, that's just how they go. So I'm glad something had to be unceremonious, you know? And I think Dolores Ed is the perfect one to do that.
That's true.
You
know? Yeah. I don't really need a crazy one for him, but perfect. The next one up, we did get a ceremonious one. Little Lady Lyanna Mormont. Fucking baller. Nice kill there. Beric Dondarrion, I'd say, got a nice moment for him as well. Wish he could have maybe gotten a last word in or something, but nice to know that it kind of mimicked Thoros a little bit. Yeah. So that's cool. Kono? Q-H?
Yeah. He's Dothraki.
Ah, okay. Oh, that main... Okay, that guy. Oh, yeah. When did we see him die?
That was they show his eye snap open.
Okay. That would be it. Lady Alice Karstark off screen. We got that one. Fergus.
Yeah, she's with Theon. Yeah.
Fergus. A commoner at Winterfell.
Oh, okay.
Probably another maybe white or another race of the dead. Maybe, I don't know. Theon next up.
Yeah.
Big got a nice moment. The Night King. I'd say the moment of the episode there. Funny one here, Stark. Who do you think Stark is, if you had to take a guess? Just Stark.
I don't know.
It's the reanimated, whoever it was, who knows who in the crypt. It's the one that came like back to life. And then someone killed him, I guess, eventually. I don't know who, but just Stark. Would have been kind of funny if it was like, if Lyanna, like it specifically showed like Ned or like Lyanna being the one to come back up.
Specifically not to do that, so I'm glad they did that. I also like to have the headcanon that Ned, it's literally not possible for him to reanimate.
No head.
Don't know how important that is, but we've never seen a white that was headless.
No head. That's probably
the headcanon for me is that if you were killed by Valyrian steel or dragonglass in the first place, you can't be reanimated. I like that.
I like that a lot. Dude, that'd be so sick.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And that's why in old Valyria they just fought with that, because if you're gonna die, you'd rather die that way, you know? Yeah. That's like, okay. Stark. Good old Stark. We don't know who. I'm glad it's not Lyanna or Ned, though. I would not have wanted it to be that way. I don't want it to make it seem that way. But Viserion up next good. A dead Viserion. And then a good moment here. Man, a sleeper. I can't believe I kind of forgot about this, but Jorah. Performance-wise, like, you were right. Like, this was a great performance out of both of them right here at the end. And then the final death, Melisandre, at the very end.
R.I.P. We get another pretty major death next episode. We're kind of there for the next couple episodes. Literally every episode the rest of the show has a major death.
Arya's kill list. I can definitely put the Night King in there.
The Army of the Dead.
That's even better. Boom. Last episode, her virginity. This episode, the entire Army of the Dead. So that's pretty badass. Just look at what can happen. You know, your world opens up after you have sex. You know, I don't know, maybe. That's definitely not the theme of Game of Thrones. I don't think that's what they were going for, but at least she got it in, you know.
Use protection.
Yeah. Of course. Yes. And who knows, maybe there is a little Gendry, a little, you know, Baratheon and Stark cooking in there.
Maybe
she goes west of Westeros and later on we find a little baby bump. Maybe that could be interesting, you know. We see a trailer. I don't know. Is that ever gonna come out ever, actually?
I'm certain that eventually there will be a sequel series to Game of Thrones. I think that Warner Brothers will be
remiss if they don't.
And it's not necessarily that I'm like they have to. I want it real bad. I don't even know that I particularly want it. You know, just get like. But the thing is that business. All these actors will eventually need work. Warner Brothers will eventually need a lot of money.
They always do.
They always do.
That's their main thing. So
I'm like, I'd be willing to bet that at some point, like the Jon Snow sequel series, I think it's been quietly shelved. I think that's done. I don't think it's happening. But the fact that it was ever even an idea that Kit Harington was also willing to do, indicates to me that it's not entirely out of the cards. I think that we will almost definitely get a sequel series for Game of Thrones. And who knows when? I imagine that wouldn't be for at least a decade after show's conclusion.
We got House of the Dragon. We got Duncan and Egg. Yeah. So we got some other stuff going.
A lot of stuff in the works. So like eventually maybe, but you know, we'll see. We'll see for sure. But let's go ahead and rate this bad boy. How are we feeling? But ahead of the rating, I'm going to do the plugs. If you would, head to patreon.com/pennybloompod where you'll find over 50 hours of exclusive content, all sorts of book reviews, comic book reviews, movie reviews, and the like. For $3 a month, you can support the podcast financially, which is huge because it costs me money and I don't make any off of it unless it's over there. Head to Twitter, follow @pennybloompod, follow on Instagram and TikTok @pennybloompodcast. Remember to leave a 5-star rate and review wherever you might be listening and to continue downloading episodes and to keep on coming back. You can watch us on YouTube now. We've always got nice stuff on display. Look up Penny Bloom Podcast and we are there. You can watch the show instead of listen to the show. If that's your thing. If it's not, no big deal. You can keep listening wherever. We're available there. So go ahead and look up Penny Bloom Podcast wherever and you should be able to find us. And if you can't, hit me up. I'll try to figure out how to get us there, you know? But how are we feeling? How are we feeling? Tens across the board?
At least for enjoyment, I'm very certain that this one's a 10. I don't think there's really many other episodes that are just surefire 10s out of the show. Let's see. I guess the other 10s that we did give in enjoyment, I guess it's happened a lot, actually, now that I think about it. But season 1, Baelor. We gave Baelor a 10. Season 2, The Old Gods and the New, season 6, or episode 6 in Blackwater, a 10. That makes sense. Episode 4, And Now His Watch Has Ended, of season 3, The Climb, The Reigns of Castamere, The Red Wedding, a 10. Yep, makes sense. Out of season 4, it was The Penultimate and The Finale, The Watchers on the Wall and The Children, Hard Home, The Door. Yeah, Hodor going bye-bye. And then the last 3 episodes of season 6.
Yeah.
So that pretty banger. And then none in season 7. And the first one, again, with The Long Night. So good company, that's for sure. Belongs there. Definitely belongs there.
Yeah, and yeah, I was being exaggeratory. I think we've only given one episode a 10 across the board. It was that Battle of the Bastards.
The only
episode we've ever given a straight 10.
Yes. House of the Dragon, we did give 2 episodes critically a 10, but that was
different. We're being excited, you know, we hadn't really refined our system.
Those are the only other 10s that we've given other than Battle of the Bastards. So, I mean, for real, the only other 10 I think we've given is Battle of the Bastards.
Also, this is not that. This isn't. It might be, I think it's probably a 9.75. I'd even potentially be okay with a 9.5. I think that visually, it's brilliant. It's astonishingly well-performed. But there are those holes in it where I'm like, I feel like we missed opportunities. We could have done a little bit more. But those things are few and far in between. Very, very limited. We showered praise on Miguel Sapochnik and, Fabian Wagner and the makeup artists and the costume designers. And just like the technical side of this was
It's incredible.
The technical side of this, it might genuinely be the greatest episode of television ever. It's just that, like, the writing, it could be a little better. It could.
Yeah, that is true. To kind of sideline the main dude of the entire show and
the main chick. I mean, Daenerys is important, but she's not a huge factor,
man.
In this.
Yeah, like, you know, putting them on dragons kind of just, yeah, I mean, like, they're kind of literally sidelined just because they are on a dragon for most of the time, and they're just out up in the sky. It's like they're still doing things, but even when they're just lost in the clouds for, like, a lot of it, you know, it's not even like they're actually doing stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I think, like, we gave Winds of Winter a 9.75 critically. So, like, that's to say that the Winds of Winter is, I mean, maybe critically,
it just depends on how much you value those things. Like, I said, I think I'd be willing to put it on the same level as Winds of Winter, because I think that that's just how good looking and how well done every other aspect of this episode is, except for the writing. And the writing obviously plays a big part in it, but whenever you are doing an episode like this that is mostly visual, you know, we are not doing a ton of dialogue, and obviously writing is very important. So like this, I don't think they're just going like, there's a bunch of battles going on. Like, no, obviously they detail the stuff, but like, it's on the director and the cinematographer and the costume designers and the makeup artists and the lighting and all this stuff to make it look as good as it does. And I think when you're dealing with such a visual episode the way that this was, I think you got to value that above, and I think it's worthy of a 9.75 there.
Okay. Yeah, I think so as well. It is to say that it's like worse than Winds of Winter feels like weird. It's like, you're right. Like, I do wish there was a little bit more to the story, but, you know, with, we have been talking about recently, like, it's to make like a movie, or I like the best, I don't know what the quote was, but it was really awesome. I forgot who it was from, but like about a silent film, about like how, you know,
the screenwriter's job is to write poetry, and then the director's job is to turn that poetry into a silent film.
Yeah. And I think
that was a Scorsese quote, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, like, that's what they're going for. They obviously are going for the visual and spectacle route. Like, you are, a lot of things is not because a character is telling you, or like the dialogue is making the moment hit. No, it is what you are seeing, or what the moment that is happening. And that's, the episode was just full of them the whole time. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So 9.83 for the average, as close as to a 10 as you can get on our scale. Actually, that's false. It would have to be a 10 critically and a 9.75 enjoyment to be the closest to a 10 that you could get with the weight that we have. But
yeah,
I don't think we're ever going to give a 10 critically. I guess Battle of the Bastards, yes, that one actually deserved it. I still believe so.
I have a tough time believing that this now we're into the part of the season that usually gets fucking bashed after this. So like, it'll be interesting to see. I doubt we'll come close to matching this. This is far and away the best episode of the season so far.
A 6.5 and a 7.92.
So by over 20% and by 35%. It's heavily outweighing those. But yeah. We got a lot to look forward to. You know, season 8, episode 5, while some of the decisions it makes have not sat well with a lot of people, sits well with me. I tend to like it a lot. I do. Mm-hmm. It's a good episode of television. I'm excited for another visual spectacle, because that's what it is. My God, is that episode brilliant. So, but next week, I think we might be in for the worst episode of the season. Got some high points. It's got some terribly low points. So I'm excited for that. But yeah, with that, we can conclude this episode of Winter is Blooming. And we can look forward to next week, where we will be covering season 8, episode 4. And I am so very excited for that one. Is that titled The Last of the Starks?
Yep. I was waiting to see if you'd get it. But yes. I wasn't worried, really. I was pretty confident you'd get it.
Yep, The Last of the Starks. That'll be next week, season 8, episode 4. And in the meantime, up until next Monday, what you can be expecting from the pod here, we've got some fun to look forward to, as this Wednesday brings us the personal history of David Copperfield. We're continuing our Dev Patel spotlight, and I'm so very excited to do so. It's been a fun time, even if we've hit some all right movies in the past. We're on the up and up, I think, with After Lion last week and personal history of David Copperfield this week. Wednesdays are Dev Patel days here on Penny Bloom Podcast up until Monkey Man's release, and I'm so very excited for that. And then this Friday, continue our coverage of The Bad Batch. Baby, we're covering the last season of Thrones, the last season of The Bad Batch, side by side, and I'm so very excited. We're only a couple weeks away from concluding Game of Thrones now. 3 weeks.
Oh my god.
3 weeks away.
Oh my god.
I remember when we had fucking 73 weeks, you know? Like we started
the show. Thing. Yeah. I don't know if we fully understood the time length and what we did, but man, it almost being over is like, holy shit.
Oh, it's
like,
incredibly
what, like,
rewarding. It's incredibly rewarding. I'm so glad we've done it. So I'm so excited, man. I can't believe we're already almost done. It's been far and away the most ambitious and expansive project we've done. We don't have another project that's taken us, you know, one a week. Every week for over a year,
We did 1 year, you know, a 52-year journey through film, and having every week for a year isn't even enough to stack up to Game of Thrones with 94.
We covered almost 60 movies for that. We covered for the comic book movie Journey Through Film as of yet. We haven't quite hit 60. It's time length been about as long as Game of Thrones, but it has not. Actually, it's not even quite that long. Because October of 2022 to now, what next week will be April of 2024.
Oh my God! Yeah, that's. That's actually nuts to think. Like, eventually, the comic book movie will overtake.
Oh, it will.
Yeah, like,
it will.
Eventually.
But we take big breaks with
sheer numbers.
One too.
Yeah.
We took weeks long breaks for Scorsese. We're taking a weeks long break now for The Bad Batch and Game of Thrones and Dev Patel. So, like, Thrones has been consistent.
Yeah.
A consistent hitter here for over a year now. So like that's a long fucking time, and we plan on covering the House of the Dragon season 2 as soon as we can. So we got a lot to look forward to. Thrones coverage, the rewatch will stop here in a couple weeks, but Thrones will live on the Penny Bloom Podcast. But yeah, with that, we will conclude this episode of Winter is Blooming. I was Colton Robertson. I was joined by Joseph George. Thank you very much, homie.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Oh, and it's always a pleasure to have you. Remember, peace, love, and bloom. And what do we say to the God of Death?
Not today.